Hey, what's up, listener? This is episode 89 of the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Thanks for pressing play. Strap yourselves in as we take a ride through Hell's Kitchen and review season 2 of Marvel's Daredevil on Netflix. I hope you binge this show because we get spoilery.
It's the Jock and Nerd Podcast with your hosts, Anthony and Imran.
Heyo, listener, welcome to the show. My name is Imran.
My name's Anthony.
He's the jock.
He's the nerd.
And this, of course, is the Jock and Nerd Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. This is our awesome big Marvel's Daredevil on Netflix season 2 review. The Devil of Hell's Kitchen, the man without fear.
Yeah.
And we have a couple of fun guest reviewers joining us for the show. Very excited. One being Mr. Rug Boy. Rugs, what's up?
What's up, dudes? I'm ready to talk Daredevil.
Good earth to you, Rugs. And also, very exciting, our buddy, friend of the show, writer, blogger, Matt Delhauer. What's up, Matt? How's it going?
Hey, fellas. How we doing?
Good, man.
Doing pretty good.
You forgot to throw in Ginger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, no, we didn't cover that.
The Ginger Matt Delhauer. Yeah. Matt Ginger Delhauer?
Because if they hear my voice through any kind of audio means and they don't know that I'm Ginger, it means I have the ability to immediately take their soul.
Oh, boy. That's
why you got to forewarn people about
that's this. A very strong power in you Gingers.
It's rule number one.
Well, also, we have to point out that that makes you the whitest of all of us.
Oh, yeah.
You're the supreme race.
He's so white that he actually has supernatural powers, everybody.
Oh, shit.
But, Matt, I'm excited to have Matt on this one because he reached out to us. And I love when people are excited. We're like, I just started this. I want to be on this. And plus, this is the first time we have Delhauer on here to talk about something good.
Yeah, well, presumably. I was about to say, it's the first time I actually get to be on the podcast, and I get to be positive about
yes.
things. And I don't just sit here and make fun of them.
So for those of you who don't know, we have a couple of shows with Matt in the feed, a great series called What the Fuck Happened, where we Matt breaks down Spider-Man 3 very entertainingly, and then we did Fantastic Four.
Fantastic, yeah.
And then not really a What the Fuck, but a Man of Steel discussion.
That
but
kind of ended up being
there
also
was
a What the
nothing
Fuck.
Nothing positive.
About,
yeah. no yes. Thing. So finally, Delhauer can talk about some quality content and we can get his thoughts on this stuff.
Yeah.
So for all we know, it's going to be a terrible show because I'm not in my element. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you might bring down this show because you're not speaking negatively.
Well, look, if you want to hear Matt's other stuff, Matt, plug your website real quick and we will get to the Daredevil.
Very quickly, I have my blog website, Ginger Geek Blogs, gingergeekblogs.blogspot.com, where I will occasionally write things. I do currently have the breakdown for background stuff on our Fantastic Four episode of What the Fuck Happened up.
Nice.
And the next one that we do, I will be doing stuff there. I will probably actually be doing a review of this season of Daredevil and most likely one for Batman v Superman as well.
Right on. You know what? And we can embed this show in that post. So, listener, I highly recommend you check out the Fantastic Four. It's a great compliment to the show.
He's talking about the podcast, not the movie.
Yes. Our review of What the Fuck Happened.
Don't do that to yourself.
Don't check out Fantastic Four. But all these links and everything we talk about in the show will be found at our show notes, jockandnerd.com/Daredevil. And the number 2, Daredevil 2, we'll do that.
Awesome. Or
slash 89. This is episode 89. All right, gang, I'm excited to get to the 13 hours of Hell's Kitchen. Here's this is how we're going to get in the mood right here. There's lyrics.
That's how you sing to it.
I didn't know there was lyrics to the song.
That intro is great, though.
You know what? I've turned. I remember on Jessica Jones, I was like, I like this one better. But then when you hear this again, wow, does it really fit the tone of the show?
Oh, yeah.
The heartbeat at the end of that Rugboy stepped on. that we didn't hear because he was singing Daredevil.
But boy steps on all the hearts.
Well, he steps out. He is a heartbreaker. Yeah. But that little boom, 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 oh, it's great.
So yeah. Before we get into your guys' thoughts on the show, I was just curious.
Spoiler?
Well, yeah, first, yeah, it is going to be a full spoiler.
Strap yourselves in, you fucks. Spoiler time.
You've been warned.
So I'll kind of move along the discussion, but wanted to know how long it took you guys, each of you guys, to watch this. And I'll start and say within the first weekend I was done by Sunday afternoon or Sunday mid-afternoon of that first weekend it came out. What about you, Imran?
Damn. So Friday I watched the first episode. Saturday I watched 8 episodes.
Yeah, Saturday was a big day for me.
And then I saw 2 more on Sunday and then I finished it on Monday. So
okay.
It was about 4 days.
What about you guys, Rugboy?
I started on Thursday. And then Friday, I got a bad case of diarrhea, and I couldn't sit and watch anything. So I had to wait. So it took me a little longer. I think I was into Tuesday.
Oh, okay.
The diarrhea really slowed him down.
What about you, Dalhauer?
I started on Friday. I legitimately started at like 8 in the morning while I was at work. I wow. was in early and didn't have anything to do, so I just sat in the back and I was watching the first episode.
That's and nice.
And I got through about the first 6 on Friday. And then I was working the next couple of days. So I finally finished it all completely by Tuesday.
Okay. Man, you watched it before work. See, I couldn't do that. It would make me too excited and not want to go to work.
Well, and the worst part was I watched it while I was at work. And yeah. I realized by the time I had started it, I was like, I'm going to have to legitimately start before I finish the first episode.
Oh, boy. Yeah,
so
that's too
distracting.
I watched
like 45 minutes of the 50-minute episode.
Oh, wow.
So I wound up finishing it during lunch.
Damn. So let's start with... just general, what did you think of the show? Like, did you think it was good, bad, okay? And since I'm asking, I will start by asking myself what I thought of the show.
Okay.
I thought it was really good, again, just like last season. I still haven't put my finger on if this is better than last season, and we'll get to that later on in this show. So I'm really curious to hear what you guys think, because maybe you guys might sway me this one. What about you, Imran?
I loved it. I love the way they split up. They learned how to use the 13 episodes a little bit better. You know, I think learning lessons from the first season of Daredevil and Jessica Jones. Great 2 arcs. Best version of the Punisher on screen. Great action. Overall, there's so many good things to talk about, really. I don't want to say too much.
Okay, yeah. Rugboy?
I liked it. I had a few little problems with it, but overall, it was good that some of the criticisms I had of last season, they kind of fixed, especially with the costume, which is I'm a big stickler for those things.
Yep.
And overall, I think it was as good as the first season. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's necessarily better, but I thought it's just as good.
Yeah.
What about you, Nerdhauer?
honestly, I would say I agree just about exactly with what Rugboy said. I thought altogether it was a great season. I really enjoyed it. There were a few things that I had to nitpick about. Nothing that was so big that really drew me out of it or made me kind of upset at it. But definitely I love the new costume. I especially love the eyes. They're
red.
Much more prominent.
Yeah.
And I think they do a lot more justice to the character and the look from the comic. I also agree it is my favorite version of the Punisher that I have seen. I have been a huge fan of that character since I was young, which probably explains why I'm so screwed up.
let's get into that. So let's get with the Punisher. You're on the Punisher. We'll start talking about him. So, because that was the first story arc.
Mm-hmm. I think Jon Bernthal did an amazing job with it.
Killed
I think
it.
They found a way that so far from the portrayals that they've had of the Punisher in anything, especially, I mean, you know, he's been on like a couple of cartoon shows, which made no sense. But especially him in film. I don't talk about the Dolph Lundgren version because it wasn't an official version of the character, so nobody ever brings it up. But
that didn't happen.
Comparing to Tom Jane and Ray Stevenson from the 2 Punisher movies we've had in the past, 12 years or whenever it's been, they both portrayed a certain type of a certain aspect of the character, but not the other as
yeah.
to what we've
yep.
seen in the comics. And there's what I always refer to as Frank the Marine and Frank the Tank.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, it ballsy for them to pick a character that had 3 film strikes against him already. credit, and clearly those guys didn't know how to handle the character. Credit's got to be given to these new showrunners this season after what's-his-name Steven Tonight left. Doug Petrie, Marco Ramirez, they figured out a way to make it organic and make it work in this universe and really give him the adaptation that this awesome character deserved.
My only nitpick was that he didn't have a New York accent, but he never does. But like, except for in the cartoon in the 90s, he had a New York accent.
Yeah, everyone has to have
it. In the cartoon in the 90s, it was like, it was a real bad New York accent.
Yeah, it was like some guy who wasn't from New York.
That's because Ed Asner played every character in that cartoon from the 90s. That's why.
I think some of the – I noticed the Punisher – I mean, I really liked the Punisher's performance, and I was reading online. A lot of people pointed back to that speech he gave at the grave as like – Bernthal really destroyed it there. And I rewatched that speech, and it is, I mean, the line where he's like, I'm holding her, and the meat's coming out of her where her face used to be. And I'm just like, oh my God. Like, that whole speech where he turns from being sort of this Terminator-esque figure.
Yes.
And then he becomes kind of human.
His range is amazing because, the first time you see him, it is frightening. It is, you get pictures of these shootings in schools that we've been accustomed to, just a guy. And walking down, blasting everything, it looks like he's just blasting willy-nilly, but then he's like, did I hit anyone? I didn't get anyone. I mean, he's a good shot.
Right.
I think it's so interesting when you put against the two episodes there, because you have the third episode, which they have a major part of it is him up on the roof with Daredevil when you first actually get to know anything about him. And it's where you're seeing this fanatical, side, this hardcore, kill the criminals, moral high ground type of conversation between the two of them. And it's this moment when Matt calls him a nut job and says that, you are insane. You are unhinged because you don't understand the value of human life. And to then see the flip around of at the end of the fourth episode when they're sitting in that graveyard and he's explaining the entire story about losing his family. And if anyone had ever told me before I watched this show that I would be brought to tears by a story of the Punisher, I would have laughed at them.
I think it works well too, the fact that in the past movies we've kind of seen, Punisher Warzone and in Punisher, his family, the scene of his family getting killed.
Yep.
Whether it be a montage like Warzone or the other in Punisher, it was actually you saw it. But this, I think it works better that he explains it. And we don't ever see it, but he explains it so well that you're there with him.
I honestly think that if they had done like a flashback or you saw anything of what had happened, it would not have nearly as much impact as just this man sitting here telling you the story of watching his family die.
Well, and he's pouring his guts out and he's like, I'm done.
And
like,
he's at a vulnerable moment.
Well, he's already physically and emotionally checked out. Yeah. Like, he's ready to die.
It's very obvious that at that moment he sits there and he's fairly certain that, after everything he's went through, he's going to die where he's sitting.
Right.
So he needs to tell this to somebody.
Yeah, he's kind of cleansing himself of his demons.
I got to bring up too another couple of scenes that really sold me on the Punisher. The one where he's strapped to the bed and it's that moment where he's like supposed to plead guilty.
Yeah,
he goes, "I'm not guilty. You're gonna burn in hell, you wench. You hear that?
Even in the trial?
Yeah, no, oh, not before. In the trial. Before in no, the
when
hospital
they, when they're yeah. when they before they go to but trial.
Pre-trial, yeah. And he's supposed to plead guilty, and he's thinking about it, and he sticks it to the DA. So that's a great moment. I think the other great character moment is when he's actually with what's her face, Karen Page, in the diner.
Yeah,
and he flips and he's giving her love advice. And I think like any other actor might have made that a little. It might have been a little cheesy, but coming from Bernthal's acting of the Punisher, it really works. And you fully believe like this guy is a killer and he has these morals, but he's also a guy that. He could give some fucking love advice to Karen Page, and it's not silly.
What I love about it is when he offers this advice to her, and he basically tells her, like, if you have feelings for somebody, go after it. And it's not advice in the way of like, well, I mean, if you like him, then tell him that you like him. It's more of him basically telling her, grasp onto what makes you happy in life now, because you never know when something like what happened to me will happen to you.
Yeah, it comes from his loss. I wanted to ask, did he shake – the Shane-ness. People are calling him Punish Shane, I heard, in the beginning. And in the beginning, you saw Shane, but by the end of it, dude, he was Frank Castle. He was the Punisher. Same way, Charlie Cox becomes Matt Murdock. These guys were amazing.
He definitely
took me a little longer to get there.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's interesting.
he definitely had some tics that you could see in his acting that I personally remember from Shane in The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
And it was one of those things where, to me, it wasn't where I'm like, oh, he's playing Shane. It was like, oh, no, that's just something John Bernthal does.
But, and there's similarities to the two characters also.
Oh, very much.
You know, so it works.
Well, he's even got it's weird to say this, but he's got the face for the Punisher. Like, he's got kind of like a broken nose.
Dude, remember when he got casted and they put up the John Romita next to it? Yeah. He's a fucking John Romita drawing come to life.
Right.
And I love an Easter egg being that they mention the word Warzone a lot when talking about Punisher, meaning the movie, but also Punisher Warzone is a great comic book series that I used to collect, drawn by John Romita Jr. He looks just like that Punisher from Punisher Warzone.
Let's move on to the other new addition to this cast. Elodie Young Elektra, who might be Elektra in name only.
This one is very interesting how they really changed the background of this character.
They went all out. They changed her race. They changed her origin. They changed a lot of things.
She's literally, I'll start out by saying I don't have a problem with them changing it as much as some other articles I've seen online. I think it worked for this universe, but she's definitely Elektra in name only.
Yeah, I think she did a great job. And
absolutely.
And if they would have stuck with the background, it wouldn't bother me. Like, the fact that they changed Elektra to not be Greek, that's cool with me.
I honestly think making her French and the way that they changed her background, and they definitely changed a lot about who she was, I'm more able to accept that and go along with that as the version they're making than to ever accept the idea that Jennifer Garner is the daughter of a Greek diplomat.
No, I'll agree. Look, initially I was like, look, we gave Man of Steel shit for missing the core concept of Superman. I was like, we should be giving this show shit for this, but what they did right was work it in so organically and perfectly in this universe that it works so well.
What they
and it
did
makes sense.
What the way it works so well is they still got the core of Elektra being kind of Matt's poison.
Yes, his temptress.
She's always been kind of for him. He's got like the Catholic thing, mm-hmm. the Catholic guilt and all that, and he's devout Catholic. But he's also kind of a sinner. Like he gives into temptation, and his temptation is Elektra.
She's his forbidden fruit,
right.
Man.
Honestly, you get even deep into like psychology and stuff. She is the id to his ego.
Right.
Like she is complete and utter just
freedom,
almost
freedom.
Hedonism.
Yes.
In what she does,
she gives him
versus him constantly being measured and double guessing and everything.
She makes things fun for him. Like
yeah.
when they're out fighting together, they look like they're having a great time. And it's like, it's basically them having sex. Like every time they team up to fight, it's like them going out and just having a great time together. And I think that's what makes Daredevil different than, like, say, Batman. Daredevil's not as broody as Batman is. I mean, there's the scene where they try to top the hallway fight. I don't know if you guys noticed, but he laughs before he gets
he
to that
and
fight.
Dude, he enjoys a lot of this.
But that's a lot of that's
there
of
are there are definitely a lot of moments in the season where they show him enjoying what he does.
Yeah,
like even the opening of the first episode when he chases the dude into the church and he winds up dropping him when he has the girl he took hostage. Afterwards, when the cops come in and they're arresting the guy, they show Matt sitting up on the roof of the church and he is beaming. Like he is so elated that he just went out and just kicked the crap out of a dude and got him arrested.
And that's a great beginning to the show because you're like, he's having fun playing Daredevil. And the duality of the character is, during the day he's going by the book, trying to put bad guys in prison. And at night he's just beating the shit out of him and getting that part of himself out. It's in there. And it was great to see it come out and do it like in the comics with Elektra.
But the thing Elektra is like, Elektra comes off too much like she's hunting people to kill them. You know what I mean? And I think that's where she goes from being an assassin to being like a hunter, like a murderer, like a vampire or something.
Are you saying in the show or in the comics?
In the show.
Okay.
Like, in the comics, she's more of an assassin. She likes to kill. She's a killer. But there wasn't that hunting. She looks like she has to go out every night and kill something.
I think the big thing is that in the comics, they're setting up the character in the show to be even before like she was in the comics. Because in the comics, she was an assassin for hire. So her whole big thing was she was only out killing because she was getting paid to do it.
Right.
This one, they're setting it more up in the idea of like she gets off on the idea of killing people. And as they move forward, she might be getting molded into the Elektra that people know better. But this is basically just like that raw, you know, first time out on the streets kind of a version.
Well, what if we've learned anything from both of these Daredevil seasons and Jessica Jones is that it's a slow burn. These characters aren't who we know them to be yet, but they're getting there. It takes a long time. I mean, if you look at the end of Daredevil season one, he finally gets a costume. At the end of this, he gets, you know, the what did you call it? The fucking...
The Billy Club. Billy Club.
And he's becoming more Daredevil. Elektra, by the end of it, is getting her costume.
I mean, the journey is definitely part of these shows. And it's awesome to watch the journey. But that is a huge change because in the comic books, Matt meets Elektra as just a regular, free-spirited party girl. Then they lose touch. And the next time he sees her, she's been trained by the Hand as an assassin working for Wilson Fisk, and she's his enemy. Now, this Elektra, this girl's a killer from a little teenager. She was trained by Stick even before Matt. And he meets her as kind of a deceptive... Like, didn't Stick send her to meet Matt Murdock? Wasn't that whole setup?
It was a setup. But he initially meets her thinking she's just this, like, intriguing girl at a party.
But it works because when Stick drops her off at the end with the adopted parents, I love that line where he's like, pay attention to how these people act, how they eat, how they interact. It's the best skill you can have. And like that's her her disguise.
It's kind of like Catwoman-esque.
Yeah.
I thought Elodie Young was great. Dude, I really enjoyed her. I enjoyed her performance almost as much as I enjoyed Jon Bernthal's, maybe even on the same level. I thought she was really good.
And props for them to give both of these characters in this, you know, it might seem like too much with in other people's hands. They both had equally good character development, equally good time throughout this 13-episode season.
For sure.
What do you think of this the thing that she's like some kind of demon or some kind of the black whatever?
Well, we're going to have a nitpick section.
I was going to say what I was looking into was, I mean, I am not one who has ever been too versed in the history of Elektra, and I'm kind of like, I would say, moderate when it comes to Daredevil. So I didn't know that the whole concept of the black sky was invented for the show.
Yeah.
I wasn't a big fan of her being a black sky, but
The thing was, I at least knew that she was involved with the Hand some way, that she, you know, has been his enemy here and there all the time. She winds up becoming, I think, the leader of the Hand for a long while. So when you get to the end of the season and they're like, oh, well, she's actually the Black Sky and she's basically what the Hand is looking for as a weapon, I was like, adding in the weird kind of supernatural aspect to it doesn't really add much. But at least they're doing something that's going to build the idea of her becoming a major problem in the future as the leader of the Hand and a huge and like a very dangerous enemy.
I think it kind of stumbled there, in my opinion, just because for now two seasons they've alluded to the Black Sky and I still have no idea what the fuck a Black Sky is.
I don't think they know what the Black Sky is yet.
What I think they're building towards, because I mean, we're going to talk later on about what we think the future of the show is. Yeah. So I'll touch on it there.
Okay.
I did like their little homage to her death in the comic books, not by Bullseye, but by Nobu, but the same way, literally like by her own side through the shoulder.
You had brought up too that you were like, why didn't Bullseye kill him? But I think the death of Elektra works better here because when Bullseye kills her, it's more of that like girlfriend in the fridge syndrome sort of thing where it's like, I'm going to kill your girl so that the hero gets mad and gets revenge.
At least in the Ben Affleck movie, it was definitely that. When it came to the comics, when Bullseye killed her, it honestly had nothing to do with Daredevil.
Right.
Yeah. It was at that point she was the head assassin for Kingpin. And Bullseye wanted to be that. So it became like a contest of like, well, the two of you have to fight to the death and I'll take whoever wins as my assassin.
I liked it though here because she is actively taking a role in saving Matt.
Yeah.
She's more proactive. Like she took her death. Like she did it for Matt. Like it means
Have her sacrifice herself makes it a lot less than like the, oh, aren't you mad that I murdered your girlfriend?
Right.
And I love her dying line, adding more character where she's like, I finally feels like, well, I know what it feels like to do something good. Like almost like a turning point for her. But look, we know she's coming back. They could still have Bullseye kill her next season. Whatever.
I mean, to me, it's not necessary that Bullseye kills her.
No, but it was nice touch.
Right.
Well, it would have been great for Bullseye to have someone like that.
If they introduced him like that, that would have been huge.
Yeah, That would have made him like the perfect villain, because like even though Elektra would have been somewhat of like an antagonist or whatever, Matt still loves her. So, you know, it's
but there was enough
foil.
Going on already in say, this
yeah,
season.
It would have been difficult to introduce yet another antagonist into it, and yes. Especially if they did it that late, yeah. It would have felt very forced.
But I have a theory when we talk about the future episodes how they could actually still do this. So,
I want to get into. So we talked about Punisher and Elektra, but let's talk about the guy that is the name of the show, Daredevil, Charlie Cox this season. What did you guys think of his character and his performance?
I love Cox. I'm just going to say that right now. Whoops.
And that's my new ringtone.
Oh, shit.
Rug boy, go ahead.
I like him. He's good. I mean, I've heard people say that it's funny because every time I talk to people who don't really watch or read comics or whatever, and I'm like, did you watch Daredevil? They're like, I don't know. That guy doesn't seem like he could be Daredevil. He's going bald or whatever. And he just doesn't look right. He's got a weird face. And I'm like, that doesn't faze me.
Yeah.
You know, for him to like overcome something that kind of turns off a lot of other people because he's so good, that's great.
I know a lot of people. Oh, no, sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, go ahead.
All right, well, I was going to say, I know a lot of people didn't like the way the costume at the end of the first season looked on him. Because
yeah.
The helmet, the way it was built and the way it sat on his face looked very odd.
It was very awkward looking.
Like, it kind of made him look like he had a really fat face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The new costume honestly did a lot more to kind of fix that problem.
The red is great, and I got to – you know, I mentioned the color palette last season. Again, they brought this great, beautiful golds and greens, but this time – they added the warm colors in. You got the violets and you got red from his costume, and it just enhanced the whole thing.
Let me show you what I noticed. What they changed? Okay, so they changed the helmet. They changed the eyes in the helmet. They made a bunch of the patches that were black red. All right, they gave him different pants that are baggier, that are more like cargo pants.
Yeah,
and they gave him combat boots, and they gave him small, like almost like MMA type gloves.
Yeah, and I mean, it suits the fighting
style.
They
made a
style.
Lot of changes.
Yeah.
I still think the costume could be improved. It's not, still not my favorite.
It needs a double D.
I want the double D logo. A logo eventually will come. I think, though, whenever he smiles in that costume, and he does look like the fucking devil.
He looks like a straight rip from the comic book page.
The way I think, I like the fact that, number one, the eyes are larger and much more prominent.
And that's
as
frightening
well as
to see those red glowing eyes is really intimidating.
The horns look better.
The horns
because
look a
lot better. Because they're not just like little pyramids that are sticking out of his head. They legit look like horns.
Right.
In the silhouette, whenever he's crouching in shadow, it looks badass. I love how he got to this new costume with the fucking crack of the bullet off his head at the end of the first episode, which is another thing I wanted to mention just overall. Amazing cliffhanger endings. This show would leave end and you're like, oh hell no, I have to see what happens next. Like what great, you know, we talked about how Netflix, they study this hook episode. They have like an algorithm for these shows to figure out when people get hooked and binge through the rest of it. And I think this one kicks off, like same thing with Jessica Jones. By the end of that first episode, you're like, oh crap, okay, I'm in. And this thing, it played like a trade paperback, like reading a comic book. Like that last scene of the first episode, boom, crack off the head, he falls off the roof, cut to black. That's a splash page at the end of a comic book.
I actually rewatched that first episode today with my roommate who hasn't seen Daredevil, and at the end it ends, and I go, you going to watch another one? He's like, yeah.
Yeah, how can you not after that? Yeah, it's great. Yeah.
I want to get back to Charlie Cox real quick. I did have to say I was a little annoyed with Daredevil's character this season in terms of I felt like he was very standoffish. A lot of times he was kind of a dick to his friends a lot.
He's a huge dick, yeah.
I see, though, where they're going. I mean, by the end of it, he fully is embracing Daredevil, the character. He realizes that being Daredevil is way more fun than being a lawyer.
He was a shitty lawyer, too,
yeah,
throughout the whole thing.
He hates – what I kind of alluded to is that he loves being Daredevil. And by the end of it, he's come to the realization that I'm Daredevil. The Daredevil is me. I'm – Matt Murdock, the lawyer, is not who I want to be.
It's definitely interesting to see how, you know, it's very different compared to a lot of your second movies or whatever it is in a film series. You know, like Spider-Man 2 set the precedent of the second movie is usually the whole issue of, oh, well, you know, being this hero is interrupting my life and making it difficult to live with the people I care about, maybe I shouldn't be the hero. Whereas with Daredevil, instead it was, being this hero is interrupting my normal life, so I need to just stop having my normal life.
I love it. Just goes the other way, and it's it works with this character. But yeah, like the whole season was such an organic continuation of last season, to where it's just so satisfying to see these characters grow.
Did you guys like Foggy and Karen Page this season? And I'll go with Del Hauer to start on this one.
I think they did a lot of good things with Foggy. It's definitely very interesting and very rewarding to see him gain a lot of confidence in himself and his abilities after the events of the first season and taking down Wilson Fisk. There's so many moments that you just feel like, yeah, fuck yeah, Foggy. Yeah, tell the DA to stick it.
Yeah, it was awesome.
His verbal acrobatics were amazing in the courtroom.
And it's great to see that they're building him to be his own capable character, and that they don't need to rely on him just being, you know, oh, come on, Matt, you have to stop being a superhero in every episode.
And he's not in the shadow of Matt or Daredevil anymore.
For once he gets to be, you know, Foggy Nelson, the guy who's getting job offers, even though he botched the People versus Frank Castle case.
But we got Anthony. You're like, I wish we had more lawyering last season. You got your lawyering, a great, great.
Oh, there was
courtroom
so much
scenes.
Law and Order style stuff in this one.
It was good. It was really I quite enjoyed Foggy and Karen Page, but I quite enjoyed as well the situation of having them have to defend Frank Castle. I thought that was genius.
Karen Page, though.
You don't like – I like Karen Page a lot.
She just – what's with this broad? She shows – like, if you're Detective Rhett Butler, you got to be like, dude, why are you at everything that happens? Like, he just saved her. She's at the boat explosion. She's at the end with the hand. Then he's got to be like, lady, what's wrong with you? Why do you keep running these things?
It gets to a point where how is she not a suspect?
I know. Yeah. She's at every single incident. You're not putting two and two together. Like, she just kept getting into things unnecessarily, maybe. It was good stuff. She did great.
Yeah.
What do you think of her new job?
Well, this was
that's the fastest I've ever seen someone get a corner office in a newspaper.
Well, I wanted to ask Matt. Matt's a writer. He knows the inside. Matt, let me ask you this: do the services of a legal assistant necessarily translate into being a journalist?
I will say
that quickly.
What it seemed to build on was initially because she didn't just walk into the newspaper and was like, give me a job as a writer. She walked in and she was like, I need to look up into your stories to find something. And at that point, it still seems like whatever she's doing is supposed to be legal stuff.
Yeah.
And because of her connection with Ben, you know, what was the editor's name?
Oh, I forget. It's hold on.
Creepy Beard Guy.
Yeah. Yeah. Baldo Beardy.
Mitchell Ellison.
It was Mitchell Ellison.
Okay, so Ellison's like, okay, because of our mutual respect and friendship with Ben, I'll help you out. And as time went on, it was because she was like, well, I'll give you the story. And then he was like, well, I want you to write the story. That doesn't really usually work out. Very rarely will an editor just be like, I want you to write this because I don't know anything about what your writing style is. But it was enough that like I was willing to just look past.
They had a history.
I mean, if they're going to keep her on this kind of investigating course, which she's been on the past two seasons, then it makes more sense for her to be a reporter than for her to be a legal assistant. Honestly.
Yeah. And like when the one point when they were even saying like, you know, Matt was saying to her like, oh, did you ever think of going to law school? She's like, that doesn't really seem like my thing. It doesn't, because she just kind of stumbles into crap.
Right.
We didn't really learn much more about her necessarily. There was a little bit about her brother.
She has a brother.
But then there was a clip also there was some accident when she was a teen with her brother that she was involved in. So, and she still hasn't told anyone. She fucking shot Owsley last season.
Well, yeah, but she's clearly like the reason why she's helping out Frank Castle and all that stuff is because she feels like she's like one of them. Like she's, I think maybe she's a drunk driver or something. She killed somebody and she didn't mean to or whatever. She meant to. I don't know.
She's carrying the guilt from killing Wesley last season.
Yeah.
And she understands what it means to be a victim who is pushed to a point where you have to defend yourself or you decide you're not going to put up with always being a victim or whatever it is. So she sees that when she talks to Frank Castle, and it's why she connects to him.
This is actually the parts of Karen Paige's character I like the best because she was the first one to see this. Like, I kind of wanted Matt to get there too, but I was really happy when she's like,
"No, you can't have Matt get there because Matt."
He's the foil. He's the counter.
He is the opposite. He's the guy that is against the death penalty. You can
now,
never
what do you
have
think about
the
romance. Have
to, they always have to be up against each other right. in an idea of we want the same thing, but not the same way.
And then Rugboy had asked about the romance, and that's actually what I was going to move on to. Is I liked their romance, and I liked that it ended because they don't agree on.
I'm Frank.
On theory. Yeah, on if the ends justify the means in terms of killing people, because she kind of does. She kind of can see Frank's point because she did it.
Yeah.
And she's gotten rid of someone that was going to kill her. So she she understands why Frank would do something like that. And Matt literally could never understand that. Like, that's totally against what Matt believes in.
But at the end, he kind of, like, lets Frank help him out and kill some ninjas. I mean, he's okay with it.
I mean, He doesn't necessarily stop him, but he's not necessarily. Yeah, I mean,
yeah,
Matt
doesn't cheer him on to do it, but he also doesn't stop and be like, no, don't shoot these guys.
Yeah.
What did you think about the romance, Rugboy?
I don't know. I thought it was doomed from the start. Like, you know what I mean? I was like, you know that Elektra's going to come and sweep Matt off his feet. You know, she's an old flame. You know, I knew it was a goner from the minute. So I was like, I never could really invest myself into it.
I like that it plays into, though, Matt's kind of dual personality. Like, Elektra brings out that temptation in him, that sinner in him. Whereas Karen Page, although we know she has a shitty background, appeals to Matt's, like, soft side, his more innocent, more day-to-day life. Like, he could see himself settling with Karen Page.
But he wants
to fuck the shit out of Elektra. Moving on to the plot of this season, did you guys enjoy the storylines of this season? I mean, it looked like there were two dual plots that really never intersected.
I don't really like the way that they did this. I know some people love the way that they did this, but I was kind of like, there was a flow problem. There was a pacing problem. I feel like that having those two completely separate stories that were not linked together in any, I'm not saying that you should tie them together. I'm just saying that, when they did that, those singular episodes to like do the background story of stuff,
yeah,
they could have used that to like be the interstitial thing. Like, why didn't we see Kingpin all the whole time? Like, instead of doing it all in one episode, you know, that could have linked everything together. Like, you know, the story that the Kingpin might have been involved or had something to do with Frank Castle, you know, or has something to do with the Hand or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, they could have tied those things together a little bit more and made it flow better instead of having one episode to describe Elektra's growing up and another episode to describe that and another episode to describe Kingpin. I felt like those kind of like stopped the flow in a way.
I got to disagree. Yeah. It didn't really bother me. I, for once, was pleased that one thing was not connected to the other because they do that shit all the time on the network shows. We hate that shit. Like, why does all this have to be connected? This is more like the comic booky feel where these things happen. And we didn't even talk about D'Onofrio.
We will.
When Fisk shows up, it is an amazing surprise. I don't think anybody thought going into this we would get this much Fisk in this season.
I don't think we saw any set photos of him in this.
So that was another amazing ending cliffhanger where that kept you going to the rest of it because you're like, holy shit, fucking Wilson Fisk, what's going to happen now?
I think the dual plots for me worked because these past two Netflix Marvel series have been kind of just one long episode, one long storyline, Daredevil and Jessica Jones. I think this worked better because it kind of built. It kept your attention because it wasn't just one long storyline. It was two things going on at the same time. And for me, it helped the pace of the show. It helped. It made it feel like the show was building up to something more. Whereas Daredevil season one, I felt peaked a little too early.
But don't you think, okay, the end of Daredevil happens of season one. Kingpin goes to jail. Wouldn't you want to pick up where Kingpin is in jail and seeing what happens to him, how he survives in jail?
They showed you just in a flashback after surprising you that, hey, Kingpin's in this now.
I have to agree with him. I really liked the surprise of Kingpin after what was like episode 8 when you're like, oh, fuck, Kingpin's in this show. Holy shit.
I will say I think that also caused the problem of the third act of the whole season to kind of get a little convoluted and fizzle out because of that
setup. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. They saved it too late. They should have. It would have made more sense. It would have opened up the end of it a little bit more for something more interesting to happen.
I mean,
they were shoving all those things in at the end. You start out with one element, that's the Punisher. Then you throw in Elektra. Then you throw in Kingpin, and then you throw in this other new thing with the hand.
Yeah.
There's too many things that at the end have to get resolved. So you kind of stack them together a little bit. You know, spread them out a little bit more.
I could see that.
I mean, they didn't stick the ending on this, and that may be what Ruggs is getting to.
We'll get to that ending.
What I think,
go ahead, with Delhar.
The multiple storylines. When the show first started, in you were in the first couple of episodes, and it's very Punisher heavy. I honestly thought to myself, I don't want the Elektra storyline with the hand and all that stuff because I find it so compelling, and I am such a Punisher fanboy that I would rather an entire season of just these two.
Mm-hmm.
Then it got to episode 4. He had his whole mea culpa moment of talking about losing the family, and we know he's getting arrested. And I thought to myself, if they stopped here with him, I would be fine with the rest of the season following Elektra and the hand because it was such a great stopping point for his story.
It was so intense.
And I figured if they ended it there, he goes to prison, whatever it is, you do the story with Elektra and the hand, you build that whole storyline, and then by the last two episodes, for whatever reason, Frank Castle's out and now he's back to help as the Punisher. Great. I would have been all about it. The fact that they decided to keep going and they did the whole, you know, people versus Frank Castle story, the whole thing with Karen Page and whatnot, I understand is because they know Punisher is a big fan favorite character. They know people are going to want to see more of Bernthal. But I think ultimately it's just because they didn't know what to do with Karen Page otherwise.
Plus,
to have her sit on the sideline and just be like, well, Matt, I hope we have a relationship, but you're never around for like 7 episodes. Would have gotten really, really boring. And that's who they built her to be in the first season anyway.
I kind of feel like the writers were starting to feel like, hey, maybe this guy can have his own series. Should we set some stuff up for him and have some loose threads?
Well, I mean,
that's going to happen.
I we'll get to that. But I think that having those court scenes and extending the Punisher storyline past episode 4 really worked because you got to see why he would give up, why he's not just focused on killing the cartel, the Irish, and the fucking the banker gang, whatever the fuck they were.
Dogs of hell.
Because at that point, he's just singly. Wow, Imran, you just fucking barked.
That wasn't me, was it?
Oops. At this point, he's still not fully the Punisher. Because all he cares about is getting revenge on those three gangs. But once he realizes how deep the corruption is in terms of the law and how fucked up the world is, that's what turns him into the Punisher, is the journey of figuring out the cover-up behind his storyline.
And what I think is funny is when they first started off with like the, oh, well, there seems to be more here and there's more to this story and everything, I kind of got a little iffy, where I was like, we really need to make it into a conspiracy theory behind what happened.
That feels
very thin.
Right.
Because just having your family killed by the mob should be enough to turn you into a psycho killer. Does it really need, was that?
Yeah, but the corruption behind it.
What I think did well with it, though, it took me a little bit of time to go back and look at some of the stuff that I know of from like Punisher storylines, and I realized the biggest thing that gives you an idea of what could be in the future is there's that last moment in the woods after Frank has hunted down the blacksmith, and he's dragging him off to the shed where he basically, you know, he plans to kill him. And Karen he's saying out loud, he's like, oh, well, this has nothing to do with a drug deal gone wrong. It has everything to do with Kandahar. Do you really think they'd let us get away with that or whatever it was?
Yep.
And then, you know, Karen wants to know, well, what's that story? What's going on? What's all this background? And it gets to a point where Frank's like, it doesn't matter anymore. I'm just going to do what I do.
Mm-hmm.
I think what they might be building to, and this is potentially if they want to do a Punisher series or whatever it is it sounds a lot like the storyline they did with Punisher in Garth Ennis's Max series called Valley Forge, Valley Forge.
Oh, I thought it was going to be Big Nothing, but that's
all. And the whole storyline for that one was there is a big government conspiracy about war crimes committed by major generals in the military that Frank knew about and had blackmail material on. and they basically decide we can't let him live anymore, and they send people after him.
See, that would make a good series.
I want to
watch that.
I want to just touch on the fact that too, the cover up and the conspiracy behind it. I think it works because literally, like, every superhero's fucking family gets killed.
Yeah,
that's all,
yeah.
And that's all their motivation. Oh, my family died.
Yeah,
that motivated me to be a superhero. Yes, he's motivated by that. But then once he uncovers the fucking corruption, I think that is key to making this guy not just singularly focus on revenge, but
he finds more purpose,
getting after everybody.
And I'll agree with that.
Yeah, it's a good setup for, you know, a storyline for his own series. There's so many great storylines.
We had mentioned Fisk, and I really wanted to talk about Fisk because I think this season of Daredevil, although Fisk was great in the first season, I think this season of Fisk made him 10 times more intimidating than he ever was in season one.
The hour and a half that he is in this entire season, he owns every moment of it.
He steals every scene, and it's so pivotal. And I love seeing how he works the inside, how he's
becoming the kingpin.
He enjoys this microcosm, and he comes in all quiet and slowly gets power. And I love that he's – every interaction with Frank and with Matt at the end was unbelievable.
You love seeing them – that's what Marvel does so well, is they make great characters, and you love seeing these characters interact with one another. The Punisher and Kingpin interacting, as well as Charlie Cox, Matt Murdock,
yes,
interacting with Wilson Fisk, were both, I thought, terrific.
And he says the word he's like a kingpin. He's a kingpin. Like, they say the word kingpin.
Well, he's realizing that in jail, he's built for this.
Yeah.
This is actually his purpose.
Yeah, I love that. He loves being there.
There is a structure that he can manipulate, right, and that is where he does best.
Yeah.
And when the smartest guy in the room.
He really is, because when shit doesn't go his way, he just flips it around and still gets it to work for him.
Well, he's the smartest guy in the room, but he's also a giant child and he has a huge temper. So that's to me is amazing, is that he can flip so quickly from being this calm, composed guy to being like threatening Matt's lawyering career and threatening Foggy Nelson.
Plus the strength, dude. The first time we see him, Anthony, what do you think he's benching? I'm saying it's like 500-600 pounds on that.
It's over 500 pounds.
With no problem. And you see his muscular arms, you're like, goddamn, he's exactly like in the comic books. It's fantastic. Even the way he fights, the big bear swings and the huge hits and the double pounding on the chest, just ravaging.
They really nail the fighting styles. Go ahead, Dahar.
I was going to say, I dub his fighting style like Donkey Kong boxing.
He's Donkey Kong.
Well, I mean, they always show, whenever he fights, he always throws a headbutt first.
Yep.
He throws these wide punches and then like,
and he pounds on you.
The Donkey Kong like double fit. He like, it's all the time. And it's great because you can distinguish what they do really well with the show is they distinguish fighting styles. Like Daredevil's more acrobatic boxer. Elektra's more ninja. Punisher's guns and just punches. He doesn't throw any kicks. No knees.
He has the Marine CQC style where it's get them away from you or put them down quickly.
He's very stabby. He's also very stabby.
He's very stabby, yes. I mean, they do a really good job in the detail of all their fighting styles.
Dude, the fight choreography, top notch throughout this whole series. Holy crap. And like, just watching Matt fight, you see, like you said, though, I love how you see street fighting, you see wrestling, you see him do unnecessary shit. Like, I'm going to flip, do a backflip just to kick this guy on the ground. But it's so entertaining. And it's like straight out of a comic book.
I have a bone to pick with that. All right, well, no, the fight scenes are great. There's nothing wrong with the fight scenes. Now, the great thing about Daredevil is that you got all the characters, except for the Punisher, basically, and Wilson Fisk, have their faces covered. So Elektra's got a ninja mask, so the stunt woman Elektra can do all the moves, and he's got the mask. So, but why are they lighting? Like, they're all wearing masks, so you could actually get away with a lot. You don't have to hide them as much. They're hiding, like, a lot of these things are backlit, so you can't see shit.
It was very dark.
And everybody's wearing black.
Yeah.
So there's nothing that's really, like, it becomes, like, boring to look at it at some point.
That last scene with all the ninjas on the rooftop was very dark and mushy.
There were a lot of points where I had to crank the brightness on my computer up to the point where it was like very noisy because otherwise you made no detail.
I won't disagree with that at all. I think they need to do a better job overall, even with the lighting of the fights. I mean, it works when Daredevil's creeping around and you just see the horns and the eyes. And I think it also kind of hides the fact that the costume isn't that great. But you're right about the fight scenes. They could light those up a little bit.
I mean, you can like you can't see the guy's face, like the stunt guy. He's doing it. They should go buck wild. Like they got like, you know, in some shows, like you see the guy's face. So you can't really do much with the stunt person. But they can go carte blanche. They could just go balls to the wall.
However, I do think in that episode three stairwell scene and the Punisher scene, those are well lit.
That was going to be my next
amazing fight scene.
My next question is last season, everyone was talking about the hallway fight scene in season two or in episode two. So they tried to top it this season with a extended staircase fight scene with the Punisher or with Daredevil, and then a Punisher he got his own hallway scene where he's very stabby. So what were your thoughts on those two fights?
The Daredevil stairwell fight scene is great and second only to the one that they did in Tom Yung Gong. Or The Protector, which is a Tony Jaa movie, where he goes up a flight of stairs.
That's a deep cut right there. I don't know what you're talking about.
Oh, dude, trust me. You want to see a stairway fight scene? Look at that shit.
Legitimately go to YouTube, search stairway fight The Protector.
The Protector.
You'll thank him.
All right, that'll be in the show notes, everyone. Let's not forget that they upped this by taping a gun to his one hand and him having a chain that was all very Ghost Rider.
Awesome.
Dude, that was amazing. Like, the way he used that chain and... Every time he fights, I love when Charlie Cox grunts. His grunting after he's done, or he smashes the light, and he's grunting like a monkey. It's like, and he beats the guys down. He's catching his breath. I love those little details.
Yeah, it was good.
I have to say, at first, when I saw the stairwell fight scene, I was like, oh, this can't top the first one because it's just a longer version of the first one. At first, I was initially like, it wasn't that great. I rewatched it, and the details that you had mentioned with the gun. He clicks the gun. Before he clicks the gun, he fakes like he's shooting it just to scare them, and then he laughs. I'm like, that detail's amazing.
Well, I thought, at that point, I thought he was actually willing to fire on the guy, and he laughed because Frank only put one bullet in the gun. He's laughing.
He knew he had one bullet.
Oh, he did tell
Frank
him
Frank told him, you have one in the chamber.
That's
so
right.
He knew he only used the one shot.
Right.
Dude, that scene, by the way, also out of the comics from Garth Ennis, Steve Dillon run. Like, exactly. Him chained around the chimney with a gun taped to his hand. Almost the same dialogue.
A bit of a different ending.
Yeah.
But almost exactly, word for word.
That was great.
So the Daredevil fight scene, after a rewatch, I was like, that was actually really good.
Because think about the choreography with the fucking chain.
Right.
And I love when you see, or you're like, oh, that asshole behind him got up again. He's got to take him down again. I love that.
What
shit.
I liked most about it, though, is in the first season of Daredevil, he kind of got his ass kicked a lot.
Yeah.
In this season, he's a really good fighter now. Like,
yeah.
That stairwell fight scene, he hardly takes any punches. Like, he's literally owning everybody.
It's almost like the costume makes him a better fighter because, A, it finally gives him a personality to hide behind. Like, you're already doing the whole Batman thing and working off their fear when they see a dude dressed as the devil coming at them.
Yeah.
But it's also like, I mean, it's got the Kevlar plating and whatnot, but it's almost like it changes his personality when he's in it finally.
That's true. Take his fair share of beating because at the bottom of that fight scene, he meets three bigger guys. He gets beat a little bit there. And then the whole thing with the ninjas, they kind of kick the crap out of him because he doesn't know where the fuck they are half the time.
Right, but I'm saying in the first season, he was getting beat up by guys that are just off
the
street.
That's true, street guys.
Just street thugs kicking the crap out of him.
Right.
Come on, dude.
So then moving on to Punisher's own little hallway scene, I thought that was fucking fantastic.
Another thing about this whole season is the violence, some of the brutality and the torture. This one I know show is good. I had to turn away, dude, just because it made me lightheaded.
Talking about the hallway scene?
I tend to have an issue when it comes to very realistic stabbings.
Yes, and smashing
shows.
Blunt trauma to the head.
I was going
to
say, when they're going like Breaking Bad cartel style, where he's like shanking dudes like 7 or 8 times in the stomach right away.
Yes, so real.
It's always disturbing to me.
And then like Sticks torture at the end. I could not with the anything with the fingernails, under the fingernails.
The fingernails
were
crazy.
Fuck that shit. I did not. I covered my eyes.
How about when he's getting a drill through the foot?
That one's okay.
And that one's okay. You're cool with that one?
Totally. That was one of the ones where I said like this is such a Garth Ennis Frank the Tank moment where he gets the drill through the foot, and then when Daredevil shows up, he's just limping around, not at like I'm high on adrenaline. I don't even notice that I can't walk.
I love it. So in that the Punisher fight scene, the last guy he stabs in the neck, and then he drops on him. Now, I know I watched it.
Just stab him in the neck. He no, stabs him in the neck, and then he drags it across his throat.
Yes, he almost decapitates the guy. The gay lands right on him, and
the guy, you mean?
The gay, yeah. The gay lands on him, but he leaves. I don't know if you guys caught this. The skull blood imprint, because when they're dragging him away, he pauses over the reflection for a second, and then blood drops, and you see.
I noticed.
I love that.
Yeah, when you pointed out that the skull is there in blood.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, that was.
Oh, I missed that. I gotta see that.
It was a very nice touch that I didn't notice until Enron pointed out.
And then Wilson is like, "Okay, well that didn't work. You know, here's what we're gonna do. I'm gonna let you go so you can clean up the streets for when I'm." And I love his line. He's like, "I don't want to wage a war when I get out. I want to win it."
Oh, I thought that was a great line. I also thought the fact that he goes. Or Punisher goes to Fisk, "Next time I see you will be the last." Oh. And then Fisk goes, "I'm counting on it." Like that, they're two fucking badasses.
Oh my God.
Just talking shit to one another.
I was going to say, and it's so great because you get to see yet another one of those classic hero and arch villain moments between the two of them as well.
Right. I mean, and in the comics, they have like amazing fights and shit. I'm mentioning another bad guy for a second. Did anybody for 1 second believe that General Schonauer, Clancy Brown, was not shady? Because fucking Clancy Brown always plays the shady bad guy.
Oh, shit.
There's no way I'm believing Clancy Brown is a good guy.
He was that in The Flash, too.
He's everything. That's what the guy does.
Well, especially in the fact that when he's in the courtroom and he's telling the whole story about how great Frank Castle is. Now, note that that is a story straight out of the comics. That is a one-off story called Born that Garth Ennis had written, which basically is a story about when Frank was back in Nam and how he has always been the Punisher. It wasn't the death of his family that made him that way.
I like that
and in that whole story, it's even more ridiculous because instead of it being Frank saved his entire team, it was Frank is the only one left after a 12-hour attack by the Viet Cong.
Wow.
And the only reason he survived is because he went ape shit on all of them.
And, you know, this is what I love about this character, the Punisher, and I think why it's so relevant today, because another Easter egg is when they're on the roof and that old man comes up and he's being actually charming to him. And the old man says he's part of the 13th. He fought in Vietnam. That's actually Punisher's origin from the comic book. Mm. You know, now they changed it to Afghanistan. But when the Punisher came out in Amazing Spider-Man 129,
his white go-go boots?
In his white go-go boots. But I think people connected because it was post-Vietnam. And they were ready for this kind of hardcore, we went through the shit. And I think now the country's kind of going through the same thing. This guy has seen hell. He knows that there's just bad people. And this he's Rambo. He's Rambo and Terminator combined. There's no nonsense. And I think the timing for this character, for the audience to connect, is perfect again, which is maybe why those first three movies didn't really connect with people.
Well, I wouldn't go. I don't know.
Bad movies.
Yeah, they're just bad movies. Don't give them too much credit.
Yeah,
they have their charm in what they do here and there. But yes, they were not the greatest that you could have done for that character. And I think it's because they didn't have an aspect to the character people could really relate to yet. You know, when the Tom Jane movie came out, it was still right after we had gone into Iraq.
Right.
And then when the Warzone came out, it was 2008. It was right around the time that, you know, people had just voted for Barack Obama. We were only at the end of the Bush era of the administration. And it was at that point that it was only a time when people were starting to be like, maybe the wars over in Afghanistan and Iraq weren't the best idea.
But, you know, like, I think that the political stuff with the military and stuff doesn't really define Frank Castle as much. Like, the best Punisher movie that ever came out that wasn't a Punisher movie was Man on Fire, starring Denzel Washington.
Oh.
And that's a story of a guy who has to go fucking ape shit because, you know, they fuck with him, you know? And they handled it like – I'm like watching the amount of destruction and crazy shit that he just lost his mind and just went balls out to get these guys. That was a Punisher movie to me. It was. I was like, put a fucking skull on his shirt and he's the Punisher. So if you ever want to see a Punisher movie that's not a Punisher movie, watch that.
I think they nail – I guess we're getting back into the Punisher, but I think they nail his character so well because he's not just a Terminator, you know, and he's not – he evolves throughout the episode. He learns more about, like I said, the corruption behind his family's death, and he evolves into a guy that's like – that you could believably sell as someone that just wants to get rid of all the criminals.
But they throw a lot. Like, was the bullet in the head necessary to add to his motivation? That maybe this is brain trauma that's causing him to do this.
That was a little weird.
They offer a concept where what you can look into is you can have very different explanations behind why he is who he
That's
is.
That's true. There's
Was
lots
it the
of
loss
reasons.
Of his family? Yeah. Is it brain damage from being shot in the head? Yeah. Was he always this crazy, especially when he was in the Marines? It's they add so many layers that so many comic writers never bothered with.
Yeah, it's true.
And I think that's what honestly makes it one of the most compelling versions.
I can agree with that.
Yeah, he's very fleshed out in that way.
Well, it makes him it makes him a really interesting psychological study. Like Matt Delhauer listed all these different factors could be why he is the way he is, but we'll never know because He just denies everything.
I'm going to ask this to the group because I really got to know my experience when I was younger and I read this stuff. It was always the same conversation, but it was between Punisher and Spider-Man. Spider-Man was on one side, like Daredevil, Punisher on the other side. And then when I was a kid, I found myself, of course, agreeing with Spider-Man. Like, yeah, you can't kill these guys. Now, as I grew up and I read more and more of this stuff, I found myself kind of agreeing with Frank. And every time this comes up, I'm torn. Like, both sides are very compelling arguments. Who is right in this? What do you guys think? And does the age at when you experience this affect which way you go?
I think that if you know that the person did it and it has done it multiple times, and you know that the system is broken and that that person might end up not getting punished at all because of the system, you tend to be a little bit more on the side of the Punisher because you know the system is broken. Now, if the system wasn't broken and someone did something and they went to jail and they suffered or whatever, then people would be less inclined to agree with them. But the fact that so many people get away with crime now, and especially like the mafia, organized crime and stuff like that, they have lawyers and shit, they're untouchable, you know, it gives you a little sympathy for Frank.
I think that storyline, that question you asked, is one of the reasons that makes this season maybe a little better than season one, because there was that bigger theme. Where season one was trying to figure out who Fisk is, you know, trying to stop him, basically. That's the whole season.
Yeah.
But this season brings up more questions that can be debated, more ideas that are relatable to anybody.
When a
death
show
penalty.
Makes you,
it's basically about death
yeah,
penalty.
When a show makes you question your own values,
right?
Again, similar like The Walking Dead, you know, it's a very good show, and it's hard to argue with both sides of their conversation.
I think Punisher almost wins the argument because Daredevil at one point considers killing.
Plus, he lets Elektra kill anybody she wants. He doesn't give a fuck. He never once called her out of that shit.
He tries to stop her.
But then she's killing ninjas. I guess the ninjas don't count because they're like undead.
No,
the ninjas
don't count unless they're like 16 years old, apparently.
Well, yeah, there's like, can we talk about the ninjas? Are they all?
Did they ever like figure out why they were had the scars and everything?
Is that why he couldn't hear their heart because they're undead and they have no heart and they've all been autopsied and the blood's been drained or something? I didn't get it.
They claimed, or at least Stick claimed at some point, that it was because they had trained themselves to not make a sound and to somehow mask their heartbeat. Now, whether it's supposed to be that it's because they're dead and back from the dead, they don't really touch on.
They kind of hint at it.
Is this the Black Sky program or whatever?
It could very well be that, you know, they're building this sort of League of Shadows concept of they're definitely more supernatural than they let on. But as far as they were getting to, they were just basically trying to say, like, well, the ninjas are such good ninjas that you can't hear them because they're ninjas.
I did like the parts where Matt's powers kind of went haywire and he couldn't use his powers occasionally. You know, after he got shot in the head, I love those little bits where it would just freak out. And that was fun. That was cool.
You just had to throw that in there?
You had to throw that in. But
what's funny is that I feel like that was almost pointless because the second episode, he's suddenly losing his hearing and his abilities after getting shot in the head. But there's no explanation as to why. It doesn't really come back in any sense.
No.
So it was just like a 2-minute problem that was there to be a problem.
Yeah,
they were trying to show his radar.
you convinced
senses.
Him, Ron, that sucked.
But did the ninjas take anybody out of this? I feel like casual people who aren't comic book fans, when they get to the ninjas, they'll be like rolling their eyes a little bit. I fucking love the ninjas because I just want to see Daredevil fight ninjas.
I guess
it can lead to a little bit of fatigue after a while. The fact that they were getting into ninja fights by like episode 5 and they kept on from there, it did. I mean, they definitely did what they could to make it keep it fresh and make sure that it was staying to the story. But it was down to a point where, Rob over on Geek Chorus was saying, almost to a point where you were having almost like 2 to 3 ninja fights an episode.
Yeah.
Plus, some of these ninjas weren't the best. Like, Claire Temple takes out a ninja that just hits him out the window. And nobody notices all these fucking ninjas running around the city all of a sudden. Nobody's calling them out.
Well, I mean, they're ninjas, dude. Ninjas don't. You notice that's ninja, that's the art of ninjutsu, ninjas, not getting noticed.
Ninjas got a ninja, you know.
They were running around the sewer, Imran. Come on.
That's true.
Yeah, dude.
The abandoned sewer tunnels. I love the superhero landing. I love that shot where he's crawling down and he does the superhero landing.
Shot.
Beautiful shot.
Since we're talking about the ninjas, I guess this can kind of break into a little bit of our nitpicking on the show, because I'll start with my first nitpick, which is I think they didn't stick the ending very well.
Yes.
I was a fan of how the show built up over time, and it felt like there was a lot of momentum going towards the ending. And I wasn't a fan of the ending villains being Nobu and that general. Here's why. The general or the blacksmith, we only saw him for like one episode. So that payoff with it being the general to me didn't really work, because I didn't really even know that character.
And was he really even the blacksmith?
No, he was the blacksmith.
Okay.
But then...
Yeah, he was running the whole heroin importing from Afghanistan thing. Early in the episode, somebody comments that the drugs that were being brought in were like high-grade Afghani heroin. So it makes... It's like a little hint at like, oh, you know, Afghanistan. So it makes sense that he's the one bringing it in, because no one knows how it's getting here.
And then for Nobu, to me, Nobu's character, I mean, he's a great fighter, but to build up to Nobu being kind of the big bad of this season, first off, the guy has literally no character whatsoever. Like, we don't know anything about Nobu. The way he's portrayed is just a silent killer. And he was kind of like a lackey in season one, so to build up to him being the season two big bad, for me, just didn't work.
You know that if you throw him off a balcony, he ain't dead. Twice, and twice Matt forgets. Yeah.
You want to know what I think was the moment that, like, I was like, I don't know, there's something wrong with the show? Yeah. Is when Stick does this huge thing to try and save Elektra's life, and then two episodes later, he tries to have her killed by some schmuck.
Yeah, the whole...
In an airport.
Yeah.
And I was like...
confusing.
It was like, I understand why they did it, they wrote it that way, but, like, I don't know, just something, it didn't sit well with me. That, and I hate the fact that everybody uses... Hell's Kitchen. Hell's Kitchen is like 5 blocks. Like, who cares? Like, it's got to be bigger than Hell's Kitchen. Stop calling it Hell's Kitchen all the time.
It's, and especially for the fact that they constantly talk about it being in Hell's Kitchen, and they talk about Hell's Kitchen as if it's all of Manhattan.
Yeah,
if he is legitimately just protecting Hell's Kitchen, yeah, it's like 2 avenues and 5 streets.
Yeah, it's annoying. They got to cut that shit out.
Did you guys?
I think that was one of the things I liked about Jessica Jones, was they didn't constantly tell you where they were. You just knew it was New York.
New York, yeah.
Whereas for some reason, I mean, I understand that it was very much integrated into the comic for Daredevil. For some reason, they constantly have to remind you, this is Hell's Kitchen.
Hell's Kitchen.
He's the devil of Hell's Kitchen.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's going to be the kingpin of 3 blocks.
I have to also say, like, the hand stuff for me kind of sucked. Just because I think they put on more than they could chew. They bit off a little more than they could chew in terms of not only the Black Sky, which we still don't know really what it is. I think they're building towards Defenders, but we'll get to this later. But also the Big Pit, the Rising.
Oh, like, they never explained what that fucking hole was. What's the Rising?
There is definitely a lot more in this season that is suffering from the setup for later on syndrome. Right.
That's the problem with the last 3 episodes, is they rushed.
Did you guys think that it stuck the landing, the ending of this?
No, because...
Go ahead, Rug Boys. You start.
Yeah,
Don't like the payoff. The whole payoff of this is this whole, like, the Nobu, the ninjas, the hand, and then Elektra being the Black Sky. I think that was all... I didn't like that. Like, that, I would have preferred it much more if Elektra was just... in charge of the hand. She was the hand. Mm-hmm. And then Matt didn't find out that she was running the whole shit the whole time. You know, that would have been a better payoff for me. That, like, you know what I mean? But, like, the fact that she's supposed to be some kind of supernatural killer, and then there was no big bad that made any sense. Like, everybody that was in this was like an anti-hero. Like, Punisher wasn't really a bad guy. Elektra wasn't really a bad guy. Kingpin was kind of impotent, you know, in a way. And, you know, Nobu is, you know, not a big threat because he's already gotten, you know, beat up by Daredevil before. So it was like a little bit like uneventful.
I would agree. I think the show, the drawback to the show is that there wasn't a big bad that we could really focus on. But go ahead, Dahar. You're going to talk about the ending.
Well, I was absolutely going to agree with that. The problem is with the first season, we saw both the rise of Daredevil and the Kingpin at the same time. Yeah. Most of season one was two stories, and you know, one of the stories was following Wilson Fisk as he rose from being sort of this, like, you know, unhappy, you know, while, yeah, he's very rich and he's involved in organized crime, he was almost kind of like this meek person who couldn't figure out what he wanted to do. And it was his rise to power and his rise to confidence that he could be in charge of all of it before he gets arrested. And the story was interesting, the character was interesting, and Vince D'Onofrio was amazing at it. And I almost feel like having him come back in the second season for an episode or two almost worked against them, because it showed you how great of a villain they had, mm-hmm. and reminds you of how little they have in the way of a villain for season two.
Yeah, I would definitely agree with that, because it made me like want Wilson Fisk to become the Kingpin right then and there.
I wanted him to break out and be a problem.
Yes, I agree.
But the so bringing back Nobu in episode 10 out of 13 and be, oh, by the way, he's back from the dead. Well, how is he back from the dead? Yeah. Well, because
dangerous?
He's back from the dead. Oh, okay. It definitely, I mean, and that's the thing, is I don't want to make it sound like, you know, as time goes on, I'm suddenly like, wow, this was a terrible season. Like, I still thought it was very good. I enjoyed a lot of it. But there were definitely these things that I think they did kind of misstep on. I don't think they should have brought back Nobu. I agree with Rugboy. If they had done it that you get to a point where they think they're about to run into the big bad of the Hand, and it turns out it is Elektra. She's been running the Hand, and she is honestly the villain that they have to face off against. That would have fucked with Matt so bad.
That like, would have been great.
That would have been a huge twist on it.
And then, I'll add on to that. I hated the fact that Punisher just conveniently shows up right after Elektra gets stabbed. Really, people? What, like, breaking off your guys' idea, had once Matt found out that Elektra was in charge of the Hand, I would have loved Matt to go find Frank and be like, look, I know we don't agree, but I need your help on this one. I'm in a tight spot. And then come up with some team effort, so it wasn't just like, oh, I just popped up, I knew where you were, and I happened to miss
I will say, although I agree that I didn't like Punisher just showing up, but he does have the
he did have the radio. That he was listening
right, he's got the radio,
and that was a big deal. Yeah, there was a lot of police coming there, so he knew. They gave a reason for him to know where what was
going
on.
That's a good point.
It was good that everybody was like, there was police swarming the place, and it was like a huge deal.
Yeah,
he was even just 30 seconds late. That's all.
Even if they wanted to keep the idea that he just kind of shows up, you then have it be something where, you know, okay, so Elektra turns out to be the villain, the main villain. Frank doesn't realize who she is or what she means to Matt.
Yeah.
So now Frank is attempting to take her out, thinking that she, you know, knowing that she's a main part of the problem that's going on. And now Matt has to fight that battle of how do I solve this problem? I can't let him kill her, but I know he's going to try. But if I go against him, he'll think I'm part of the problem. You've got – pull him in two different directions, and you – It can be a defining moment for his character.
Yeah, that would have put him in a very tricky situation that I would have liked to have seen played out.
You know what I'd love to see more of? And they did this a little bit. I would love to see more of when Daredevil and Punisher are fighting thugs. Daredevil is half fighting the bad guys and half stopping Frank from killing the bad guys while he's fighting the bad guys.
The choreography in the fourth episode when he saves him from the kitchen Irish.
Yes.
And it's that whole thing of like, you know, fight this guy, fight this guy, fight this guy, knock the gun out of Frank's hand. Fight this guy, stop him from bashing the dude's head in.
That's great. That's right from the comic books. Like, I would love to see a little bit more of that.
Do you think that it's inconsistent, though, sometimes? Because sometimes, like, Daredevil will do something that's like so dynamic and like super heroic. Like, he'll leap for like longer than a normal person should. Like, you could tell that he might have a wire or something, and then all of a sudden that'll stop.
And then he's normal. Other fight scene.
I will agree. There is a little inconsistency there.
I thought it was kind of interesting that this season compared to the first season, there was a lot less acrobatics in what he did.
You know what?
Like, you had a lot in the first season where he's jumping off of walls, he's running up stuff, he's doing a lot of, like, you know, he did some of his flip kicks and stuff like that, but it was a lot more just like down, like street boxing kind of street fight style to him.
I mean, I missed that.
I think the reason that they did that is so Punisher wouldn't look like a slouch next to him.
Oh.
And like, I think that's a little bit of the problem I have is something that's always so interesting in the comics is when it's Punisher versus Daredevil, it's less of them doing just a straight up fist to fist fight.
Yep.
Daredevil, like, he's jumping around, he's dodging out of the way, he's flipping over top of him and showing, I don't have to fight you, I just have to get out of your way.
Or wear you down. He fights him like Spider-Man would fight him. He's just hopping around. I wish he had gotten that billy club sooner. Why did they have to wait till the end? You could have thrown in some more of him swinging around.
I mean, have you
It's such a big thing they like to do with these seasons. Yeah. Like, think of it this way. Beginning of the first season, he's running around in the black outfit. He gets the legitimate costume at the end.
Yeah.
Yep. Punisher gets his costume at the end. Elektra gets her costume at the end. Yeah. He gets the billy club at the end. It's always
even if you look at Jessica Jones, at the end she's finally getting superhero calls to help so that she's becoming a superhero.
It's the journey.
She
has the alias investigations door back and stuff like that. It's always that, like, leave them at the end of finally getting some fan service, cuz then they want the next season for that to be there.
What do you think of
Elektra's costume?
I thought it was interesting in the fact that, honestly, the whole time that she was running around in just like her training outfit and the mask, I thought that was her costume and I was fine with it. Finally gave her one from Melvin Potter. It seemed almost less practical.
Yeah.
Plus Potter missed a huge spot of where to put some of that armor, apparently, because the fucking thing goes right through her shoulder and kills her. She just got this new costume made by measuring her out. She should be covered in this armor, and she stuck his fucking stab through the heart.
Yeah, he's talking about it being some kind of like poly, you know, tri-weave mesh or something like that to be, and he's like showing, he's like, yeah, pull on it. It doesn't, it doesn't, have any give or whatever it is. And it's like, yeah, but apparently still easily punctured.
It's still good stuff. I loved Melvin Potter got. You got to see the stilt legs. You got to see his buzzsaw. You even got to see the designs of his gladiator costume when he goes to get the billy club underneath is like the designs of gladiator.
One of the things I didn't like, I mean, I love Melvin Potter, but this is just going back to Elektra real quick, that she gets her trademark weapon from a guy who's trying to kill her.
Yeah.
Like, she should have always had those size.
That's how she
those
gets size the size.
Should have been on her all the time.
Yeah, that's
like,
that's
there's no reason. Yeah, I don't like that.
That's how she gets the size. She was trained with swords. I don't know, not size.
And I do think it can be a little tiring when they have to give you like a, that's where this came from and that's where that came from for everybody.
Yeah.
If she had just shown up with the size, everyone would have been fine with it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, it's the formula. It's what you're going to get with these Netflix shows. I wouldn't be surprised if in Iron Fist, he doesn't wear that mask till the end. Like it,
or even Luke Cage doesn't Luke Cage up till the end or whatever.
Well, Luke Cage.
Honestly, with Luke Cage, I doubt they'll give him a costume.
Yeah, Luke Cage.
They will go entirely Jessica Jones with it, and he'll just be a dude in a Carhartt jacket beating the crap out of people.
Yeah, Iron Fist. They're gonna put him in a goofy yellow and green costume. Until the very end.
Last episode.
Last episode.
He'll be in his pajamas by the last episode. But no, I mean, it's just it's what you're gonna get with these Netflix shows. It's something that I wish would be different, but. It's not a big enough problem for me that I would make that would make me sway away from liking these
shows. It won't make me stop watching.
Yeah.
So let's do like just random favorite moments of this season, because obviously we all liked the show. We have our problems with the ending. We have our problems with certain elements of the show, but for the most part, we all, I think, really liked it. We obviously binge watched it. So I'll start with a random favorite moment. I thought the courtroom scene where Frank Castle, the Punisher, is telling everybody that he liked killing people, and he goes, "Hell, I loved it." Like, he's given that huge speech where he's just admitting to guilt and admitting to murder and saying he would do it again. I thought was fantastic.
You mean when Matt blows the case he gets that message from the cop?
He's building the whole "we need heroes" defense, and Frank basically tells him you're full of shit.
Yeah,
that's like law 101. Like, you're not supposed to antagonize your own fucking witness and treat him as a hostile witness.
Treat your own witness as hostile. Way to go, Columbia.
It totally backfired on him.
That was weird too. I guess that's a nitpick, but that was kind of weird. That he's like, permission to treat the witness hostile.
It's like, it's your witness.
It's granted. No, but then not the fact that he's treating him hostile, but that the fact that he doesn't really answer and he ask him any more questions. He just goes into his closing argument with the witness on the stand, which was kind of weird.
I want to give a shout out to the lady who played the judge because she was awesome. She was just like, yeah, she was so impatient. She was like, all right, let's just get to it.
I was hoping to God that they were going to go like full Law and Order on it, that at some point she was just going to be like, I'll allow it, counsel, but watch yourself.
I got to tell you, one of the moments that made me go,
oh, shit,
I did not see coming is when the DA Reyes just gets fucking blasted when they're while they're sitting there.
Yeah, I like that, too.
Holy shit. I did not see that coming. It totally caught me off surprise. And they're having this crazy conversation. She's almost on their side now. And she was in Jessica Jones. I forgot that Reyes, is, as well as Jerry Hogarth.
Jerry Hogarth made an appearance
made
in this
appearance.
One.
Yeah.
She hires Foggy.
Yeah.
Which then means you'll most likely see something of Foggy in season two of Jessica Jones.
And Claire Temple will probably be another running thread through all these, which I like that idea.
Claire Temple is the Phil Coulson of the
She's
Avengers,
the Phil Coulson. She can Netflix show up. Marvel. Everyone needs a nurse. Although she doesn't work there anymore.
She apparently will be, I think, most utilized in Luke Cage.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because they have a little...
Claire Temple, again, was, I thought, really, really good. I enjoyed... I think, although, go ahead, Rugboy.
I think the one nitpick I have about Claire Temple is that it became very obvious this season of how much they wanted her to be, like, the audience...
the viewer?
Yeah, the audience avatar yeah. in that moment where yeah. she's like, she's just sitting there and she's just like, how about you stop being an asshole and you just go downstairs and talk to your friend? And you're like, because everyone's thinking like, dude, just go see Foggy. He yeah. got shot. Plus, and he's like, no, and leaves. And then it's like, well, that entire exchange really did nothing.
She knows everything we know, like throughout these three series that other characters in the shows don't know, meaning Jessica Jones and Daredevil and the second season of Daredevil.
Oh, yeah. You're right about that convo, though. It doesn't really change anything about Matt Murdock. He still is like going to be an asshole after that. Like he doesn't give a fuck. About Foggy in that moment.
How do you feel about the Chased and Stick and his whole gang? Did that go over well for you?
They didn't give enough to really have an opinion on it.
Yeah, I didn't really. It was kind of convoluted. I
enjoy Stick being an asshole. Yeah, I enjoy that.
I love Stick getting the Nobu kill.
The cantankerous old blind man is a great thing.
Yeah. His personality, I love how just. How much of an asshole, how much of a douchebag he is.
And he's at the end where he kills nobody. He's like, this time you stay down, you son of a bitch. And you see his head roll away. Jesus.
Well, I also love that he does that. He puts the sword away in his coat and starts walking away.
I love it.
With cops in the background just like, I don't give a shit.
But that's the beauty of him and Murdoch. Like, when Matt tells Karen that he's Daredevil, part of me is like, you should have figured this out. He's beat up all the time. But then I'm like, wait a minute. How are you going to guess a fucking blind guy is Daredevil? And same thing with Stick. It's the best secret identity ever.
Well, that's why I think Foggy's reaction in the first season when he finds out that he's, you know, he's going out and doing this vigilante stuff is perfect. Are you even blind? Have you been lying about that?
Can you see all the time? I did feel that Foggy should have cut him a little bit more slack this season. He knows what he's doing. The guy is trying to do good another way. Why are you being such a dick about it?
Well, but at the same time, you have to look at it this way. If one of your good friends that you've known for years comes to you and says, well, every now and then I go out at night and I just get the shit kicked out of me because I think I'm a good person, you're most likely going to tell him, well, stop it.
Yeah, he's a little...
Well, also to Foggy's defense, as if he's a real fucking person, he's actually in business with Matt.
Yeah.
So he has a reason to be like pissed off because Matt is costing him money.
Interest here.
It's
he's ruining his life, basically.
I thought of another nitpick.
Okay.
I wanted to see radar sense. Part of the reason I love reading Daredevil.
I don't think it exists in this universe.
Is how you, when you see how he sees.
Go ahead, Nerdhauer.
Yeah, I said they made it very vague in the first season because they talked about like a world of fire or whatever it is, and they very barely touched on it, but they just completely put it to the side this year.
I don't think he has a radar sense, because if he had a radar sense, then the ninjas not having any heartbeat wouldn't have made a fucking difference.
Because he should have been able to see them.
Because he would be able to detect them.
However, I got it.
Yeah, they do have him running more off of his hearing and stuff like that.
It's the hearing, yeah.
But that being said, I have to – the sound mixing in this show to show his power is unbelievable. It was very, very well done. You felt like you were hearing what he was hearing, and it made sense. And anytime that he was using his powers, the way they had the soft focus and the double – it's like a double focus where two things are in focus. And how he like communicated with Stick, that was pretty cool. They could kind of whisper to each other. Yeah.
That was a cool scene.
So the sound mixing is phenomenal and very important in terms of his powers.
Speaking of the sound, did you guys notice that this season it seemed like the first season the music was always kind of downbeat, but there was a lot of heroic music throughout this season. Did you guys notice that?
Yeah. Yeah.
They were kind of embracing the fact that this is more of a superhero show.
Very more comic booky this season.
More comic booky.
Which, you know, it goes back to like, what did I think compared to the first season? It's just as good but different. Here's why. The first time we saw the first Daredevil, we didn't know what to expect. It's still so special to me because I was like, I can't believe they're doing this and they're doing it right. And it just that I don't know if you could top that specialness. It's just as good. Mm-hmm. But that first one was very special because it was kind of groundbreaking.
There. Let's end with this question before we take a break. So what's the final answer? Better than season one?
Equally as good, but for different reasons.
Okay. What about you, Matt?
As much as I love Punisher, I love what they did with Punisher, I'm going to say I still think season one was better just because I think the writing was a little more solid. It was a little bit tighter.
Yeah.
And it was it's a little bit, I guess, of like, you know, your first time around is always going to be special. And the second time you probably can't live up to. I think they dove a little too deep into going with mythological comic book stuff. Especially in a show that was so reality ground the season beforehand.
It's a fine balance.
What about you, Rugboy? Better than season one?
I think it's as good in a lot of ways as season one. It was a little bit easier to watch. It wasn't a slow burn, which is good. But with that came some clumsiness. Like, they rushed things, you know? Like, so it's like when you're going fast, you know, shit can get fucked up. So in that respect, it's a little bit more of a step down than the first one. So I do like what they fixed. I do like the costume that they fixed. I do like the way that it's becoming more of an action show, and it needs that because a lot of people think Daredevil's boring. Mm-hmm. Like, people that aren't into comics, they some couldn't even make it through the first episode, the first season. So I'm glad that they're going in this direction, but they have to be more dynamic. If they're going to be a superhero show and have the music and all that stuff, it's got to be a little bit more dynamic. It's got to be a little bit more, you know, pumped up in that way.
I can't
have both.
I like seeing this progress in these Netflix shows. They're learning, they're trying different things, they're tweaking, they're adjusting. And this is new for them just as much as it is for us. And I'm really excited to see as series by series goes how they utilize the 13 episodes.
Now we'll get to that. We'll get to the future, but I'll close with I think it was just as good as season one in different ways. Season one, obviously, it was new. It was special because it was the first Netflix show and it was getting Daredevil right. And they had Wilson Fisk. But I quite enjoyed this season. Obviously, the Punisher we've talked a lot about, and Elektra, and some of those additions. And I think this season did a better job of giving like Foggy and Karen stuff to do and made them all a little bit more likable than maybe they were in season one. So because this season didn't stick the landing in terms of its payoff, I don't think it's better than season one, but I can't say it's any worse than season one either. I think it's on the same level. So,
does it need to be 13 episodes? What is with the 13?
I think that's just what they're contracted to do. I don't know if it's a problem or not. I think I enjoy it.
That's how you use the 13
episodes. I could see the argument for maybe this being cut down to like 10. Or what I've seen online is Devin Faraci suggested this is just – let whoever's the showrunners are who are the producers of each show just decide how many episodes they need.
That's the thing. Each series doesn't need to be a standard set. One could be 10, one could be 12, one could be 13. It should serve the story and not – you shouldn't feel forced to like, I got to put this in 13 chapters.
Yeah.
I don't think it bothers me that it's 13 episodes. You could do – you know, it's nothing wrong. 12 issues of comics come out a year. So it's like it plays well with comics. So I don't think it's that far-fetched to do a run as a like you would get in a year, you know, as a show. So there's nothing wrong with that.
What I would wonder is, even if you keep it to being 13 episodes, do you need to have it be that all 13 episodes follow one through line? Because in a year, you're not always going to have all 12 issues of a comic be the exact same arc.
Right. I feel like they did that a little bit with the first two acts. Like I said, it was like reading, you know, a couple of story arcs in a Punisher or Daredevil comic book.
It wasn't divvied up quite well enough.
Well, it was close. It was very close until the last three episodes. After these messages,
we'll be right back. Do you like superheroes? Do you like comics? Do you like film? Do you like comics and films about superheroes? Well, then you're in luck, because we here at A Place to Hang Your Cape have everything for you. We've got reviews. We've got interviews. We've got list articles. We've even got a few videos coming up. Anything you could possibly want that's relating to superheroes, we have. A Place to Hang Your Cape, where superheroes go to hang their cape. The name is self-explanatory, really. I don't know why I have to explain it, but there you go. Find it at ap2hyc.com.
The H stands for H.
The H. The Jock and Nerd Podcast.
I have a question that I want to ask Anthony and the boys.
All right, we're back.
We're back.
My question is, how many seasons should this go?
Forever.
I don't think it should go that long. I think the longer it goes, I think they got to go at least four seasons, and then they should maybe cap out at five at the most.
I think what's going to help it – that's actually a good question to start the segment. I think what's going to help it, though, is the fact that they have those other – like Iron Fist, Luke Cage, and these characters can probably cross over. So they don't necessarily need to have – all these extra seasons. They can have these characters make cameos and other stuff that'll extend the longevity of the life of these characters.
Well, what's the end game then, Ruggs? Do you think people just burn out on it? I mean, I think we're going to have these at least till 2020.
Well, look at what's happened with Walking Dead. Like, you know, I'm starting to fucking hate the show sometimes.
It's just going on and on and on.
Well, it just when you people have to – the characters have to progress. They can't just keep being the same thing. Like, all right, we've already seen Rick go crazy, this and that, and whatever, and then now he's back to being a leader. And then where are they going to go from there, you know? So with Daredevil, I think that he has to come into his own and be the, you know, the superhero that New York needs. And, you know, they got to trot out all these villains that we haven't seen yet. We got to have Typhoid Mary. We got to have Bullseye.
Yeah.
We got to have, you know, some of the other guys that, you know, even Stiltman, you know, or whatever, the Guardian, end up coming out. And some other of those low-level Daredevil bad guys, you know, even Tombstone could be involved, you know. But that's a Spider-Man villain. There's a lot of Spider-Man.
There's a lot of Daredevil crossover.
Yeah. I was going to say, Spider-Man, Daredevil, and Punisher all really shared a lot of villains.
Yep.
The owl.
I think what they're doing, though, I think that's why you're seeing these slow burn, is that they don't want to burn through this stuff too quickly. So even by the end of this season, he's basically now just becoming the Daredevil that we all know. He's not finally got the Billy Club. He's finally like, you know what? I want to be the Daredevil. Fuck the lawyer ring. I just want to be Daredevil now. Like, that's why I think you're seeing this slow burn, is so that we don't get too tired of these characters. We haven't really even seen Daredevil as the Daredevil we know on screen yet.
I mean, I don't know, because the problem I foresee is, at the moment, the cinematic universe pays absolutely no attention to anything on TV, whether it's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or the Netflix stuff or anything like that. Now, granted, when Age of Ultron came out, the only thing that had been out was Daredevil, and they're not going to suddenly be like, oh, do you guys hear about this dude running around in one neighborhood of New York? But it's like, we're at a point now where The Inhumans storyline with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is so big and is so public that, like, to have them ignore it in the movies at this point almost would feel ignorant.
Yeah, of that. No, I agree. That's one of my big problems with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., among many other things. But I think it works for the Netflix stuff because it's contained to New York, and it's like,
and yeah,
and it's so, street, it, it's street
it really
level.
Is such small time compared to what the Avengers deal with. Right. That, like, Tony Stark doesn't need to care about some dude beating up drug dealers in New York City.
Right.
You know, most of the little nods were in the newspaper office on the wall, where you see Battle of New York, you see Cybertech which is the company that made Deathlok. You see Stark Tower mentioned. Like, that's the only way they're combining all these things.
The newspaper story about the big abomination battle in the middle of Harlem.
Yeah, yeah. They have even the Hulk. They refer to the Hulk in one of the headlines. So this is kind of the only way they could tie all this stuff together is background Easter eggs. Now, I didn't see Stan Lee in this one.
He wasn't.
No, he's not in that. They didn't put him in the TV show.
I was going to say, no, he was in the Netflix season one. In a very, very obscure.
There was
manner.
A picture of him on the wall of the in the police office. Police.
Oh, I think that was Jessica Jones.
That might have been in Jessica Jones.
It was in.
Did you guys think
was Daredevil? I don't think he showed up in any way with Jessica Jones.
No, they had a picture of him They had a picture of him in the police station. In that one scene where Kilgrave has everybody.
Oh, that's right.
Oh, yeah.
There's a picture.
So I thought that was Daredevil.
It might have been. I think it was Jessica Jones.
I think it was the same police station.
It was the same. Yeah. It was in both in the same police station. So they could have thrown that in again.
Did you guys
I
think?
Have a question.
Oh, go ahead.
What do you think, Matt? If Matt's going to be so busy being Daredevil, how's he going to pay his bills?
That kind of didn't make sense when he was like, "Oh, we'll manage," and they're like getting paid in fruit. He's like, I don't know how, but we'll manage.
But I mean, it's also it kind of falls into just like that concept you see with a lot of television and movies where money isn't something people ever think about.
Somehow the bills get paid.
Like, I mean, the friends in Friends never could have afforded those apartments middle of Upper Manhattan.
Do you know
actors and waiters?
Yeah, do you know how much rent that is? Wait, so at the end of the season, Karen's off at the newspaper. Foggy is possibly working for Jerry Hogarth.
Yes, he is.
Yes.
And it's just Murdoch alone at his law practice. Everyone's
now, he's got like a substantial nest egg from Elektra.
Elektra, yeah.
Oh. Yep.
But I don't even know if he's going to be practicing law. I don't remember if they even – I think he's just Daredevil
right now. I honestly think by season three or wherever we see him next, he is going to be almost entirely full-time into just being Daredevil.
Can I talk about what I want them to do in season three?
Well,
go for it.
Well, before you even say that, do you think they're going to release a season three before the Defenders?
I don't think they – I think they've said Defenders will be before season three of Daredevil. Okay.
So they're going to go Power Man, Iron Fist, Defenders,
and then Daredevil, Jessica Jones.
They greenlit a Jessica Jones season two as well.
Which that's even more – like what the fuck is that going to be about? Like that's more concerning to me.
Well, get to your Daredevil season.
Okay,
three.
This is what I think they're setting up. The last scene when Murdoch finally meets Fisk, and it's an amazing scene because Fisk just breaks his handcuffs and shows him that he's really running the prison, and he slams Murdoch, and he promises to destroy his life. Now, there's an awesome storyline in the comics called Born Again, Frank Miller, where this is exactly what happens. Wilson Fisk goes after Matt Murdoch. He makes Karen Page a heroin addict. It destroys his life. So he goes after him professionally, not as Daredevil, and it completely destroys Matt. It's an amazing story. It would be a great way to get Wilson to be the big bad for season three again, and I want them to do that.
See, for season
I was going to say they also tie into the Born Again story is he sends Elektra, who could then be Bullseye for it, to try and kill Foggy.
Well, yes, and then that's how you get Elektra back, and that's how you get Bullseye to kill Elektra again or something.
You don't need Bullseye to kill.
Only I want that, I guess.
But you,
she already practically died twice this season.
Right. That's true.
Season three, I actually do like that the Fisk destroying Matt Murdock and not I like him destroying Matt Murdock and not knowing fully well that he's the Daredevil, but just going after him and it's ruining both obviously Matt Murdock as lawyer and Matt Murdock the Daredevil. Although he did hint, he was like, "Give me that file on Matt Murdock again." Remember at the end of this?
Wilson did?
Yeah, he's like, give me a file. Like, he says that because I think he says that because when he got punched in the face by him, he's like, that's fucking familiar.
Oh.
This guy just hit me right in the face.
He should feel. Yeah, and like
how does a blind know how to punch me directly in the nose?
Right.
But he played that so well. Like, you could see Matt, like, trying to, he was restraining himself. He's like, I can't punch this guy.
That was so amazing because you know Matt can kick his ass.
And he wants to so badly. I mean, he flipped the man over his head last season. That's unbelievable.
But for season three, I think they definitely have to – they got to get Bullseye in there because Bullseye is so awesome because he's similar to a lot of villains in that he's just like the bad version of the good guy.
Yeah.
But the guy is fucking insane.
Yeah.
And he can't get over the fact that this guy is better than him at something.
Like, it just drives him crazy.
He's singularly motivated to
– makes it personal.
Yeah, to get after Daredevil because the guy is better than him. And it's
– who would you cast as Bullseye?
Not Colin Farrell.
I'm so bad at this stuff.
Jason Statham?
Wasn't that the rumor?
A lot of people have said that they would want it to be Statham.
Let's see what he looks like.
That was the rumor.
I don't know if he would sign on or not. Because the thing is I don't like Statham is good for action and apparently he can be funny, but I really don't think Statham is an actor.
That's what I said. I was like, I don't think he could act the part.
I think he bashed Marvel too, so I don't think that's ever going to happen.
Oh, that's right, he did.
He went up. But I like Bullseye's character would work great too because his dichotomy with Fisk, like Fisk is motivated by like power and saving Hell's Kitchen and acquiring things, whereas Bullseye is a totally different kind of villain.
He is a crazy man, which is what
insane,
you gotta love.
Man. Yeah, I don't know if they'll have the dumb costume, but they gotta have Bullseye in season 3. That's my main
like Joker level crazy.
That's my main ask is have Bullseye in there because he's basically like Joker to Daredevil. Just like Batman. Mm. I also like the Fisk. Fisk is probably gotta come back as a villain again in season 3. So those would be my two asks.
Yeah, he's probably going to try and find guys that can dispatch Daredevil for him. You know, he's going to find guys that's maybe where Bullseye comes along. Maybe he gets a bunch of different guys. Because there's a bunch of guys that the Kingpin tried to use to kill Daredevil in the past. So it might be worth looking at.
I think that'd be interesting too. Is adding in a number of Daredevil villains for that Fisk is working with. I think that'd be cool,
especially if he's trying to pull the strings from being in prison and is sending people who are outside after him.
Oh yeah, that would be awesome.
What if he turns Melvin Potter against him?
Well, I think I would love to see Gladiator suit up also in season 3. In some capacity, and
I was going to say, so they can finally stop throwing Gladiator posters at us and having him pick up saw blades as weapons whenever he feels threatened.
But how do you get him to turn on Daredevil and he's hooked? And he even goes at the end. He goes, Betsy, that's
it. Yeah, he's got the daughter.
Yes, he's very.
That was how he worked for Fisk in the first place. He had he threatened Betsy.
But Potter loves Daredevil. He goes, look. Us guys down here, we know you're fighting on the right side. We know you're helping.
It can only happen if they have, for some reason, they make it that either Daredevil does or he thinks Daredevil has put Betsy in danger.
Right. The owl will probably come back as well.
Man, imagine if Kilgrave was still alive, how awesome he would be as a Daredevil villain.
Yeah, I would think.
What about Mysterio? That's a really wacky one.
I don't see them doing anything too
that
crazy.
That they it would be further down the road because they have to really establish more into like Iron Fist and Doctor Strange with the weird magical stuff.
There's also a silly dude named Jester. I don't think that'll work at all.
You're just reading these right now.
Well, it's top 10 Daredevil villains. We went over all of them.
I was going to say, everyone's just looking at the Silver Age villains in Marvel.
You got Blue Talon, which is a martial artist that could be tied to the Hand. You got, of course, you got Bullseye, and that's basically it. You got the Owl, the Eel, and then you got a bunch of Spider-Man villains.
A lot of water-based villains for some reason, just one, Eel.
I honestly would not be upset if they brought some of these Spider-Man villains into Daredevil.
Yeah, they should, or some kind of crossover.
Typhoid Mary, that's a big one.
If they're building on having Spider-Man be more movie-based than like the Netflix series-based because he's so much more of a popular character. You can't go the same route as the other Spider-Man movies and pile like 9 villains in.
Right.
So you need to put them somewhere.
Let's get into, we talked a lot about the Punisher and we've been talking about the future of Daredevil. Do you guys want to see a Punisher spinoff and do you think it will happen?
Oh my God. Yes, I do.
I fucking watch it.
Go ahead,
absolutely,
Matt.
I do, just because, like I said, I am such a fanboy for the character that I don't care. I want that to happen.
There are so many great storylines with Punisher. Look, they set up Microchip a little bit. That was a little Easter egg where he smashes the thing and says Micro. It says, you know, you give him a little team now. He's got a tech buddy. It's a lot like the show Person of Interest, which is like Punisher and Batman put together. You get a guy in the van with gadgets and you got Punisher running missions.
I always referred to Person of Interest as a modern day Batman Beyond.
It totally is, dude. That show is such a superhero show. It's fantastic.
If I could play devil's advocate, and I'm not saying I agree with this, but I've read a lot of stuff online where maybe they use Punisher in the role of like the Hulk has sort of in the Marvel movies where he appears and stuff. but is not.
But he never has his own thing.
But never has his own thing, and that's because Punisher on his own might be a little too depressing.
There is that argument where he is at
a little
once
too dark.
He is a spoil and a foil for our straight narrow superheroes, and you kind of need a counter to work with.
Right.
The truth is, I mean, I personally would enjoy a Punisher series just because I like the character. Yeah. I can understand that they may not want to go that route. And if they don't, I'm not going to cry and moan over it. I can understand their reasoning, especially if we're looking at trying to foresee a third season of Daredevil that has Fisk being a major villain again. That does mean at some point Punisher is going to have to play a role in it, because he – if he knows in any way that Fisk is involved in things that are happening in the city,
yeah,
he's not gonna take it lying down.
I'd be okay with that little Punisher cameo in season three.
So suddenly, if you have it at season three, is Punisher and Daredevil versus Kingpin?
Ugh.
I'm in.
I think a Punisher series only works if you do it like old school Incredible Hulk. Make him on the run.
Ah.
Like, if he's, like, got the advantage, it really becomes non-sympathetic. Like, he has to be on the run. Let's say, like, the mafia or the army or somebody that he can't really fight on his own is after him. And it makes him be more resourceful and more, like, kind of not so much a unstoppable force. Like, he can be an unstoppable force and when he's taking out mobsters and this and that. But, he's got to be preoccupied with being able to stay alive, too.
I mean, if they do it, I foresee them doing something where he gets like a bounty placed on him.
Yeah,
you know, because he's killed a lot of fucking people.
One of the big things that they played on at the end of the season is everyone thinks he's dead already.
Yeah.
Oh, that's right.
So yeah. the reason why he's able to don the skull and be the Punisher is because everyone thinks Frank Castle's dead.
That's true.
A big thing that they've also done a lot in the comics is he doesn't always just stay in New York. He's had plenty of stories that have seen him.
Yep.
You know, he had a whole arc with Nathan Edmondson where he was out in L.A. He's gone down into Mexico to go after cartels. He's gone over into Europe to go after sex traffickers. He's gone into the Middle East to go after terrorist cells. Like, his mission is not just New York. It is stopping crime and evil wherever.
Yeah.
You know, you mentioned the sex traffickers thing, and I just have to mention, even though this isn't the segment that we're talking about this, but the scene where he's in the pawn shop and the guy's talking about 12-year-olds.
That dude would have lived.
And Punisher literally puts down his coffee, turns around, picks up a bat and bashes his head. I'm like, that's the fucking Punisher right there.
That dude would have been fine had he not gotten
on his face. Where it's like the guy says it and the look on his face just says like, God damn it, dude, I didn't want to have to kill you.
Right.
Yep. Now I got to kill you.
It's like out of obligation. Like, I got to get rid of you now. Like, and the fact that he's like illegally paying for these things, and like that's not a problem for him at all.
That's where he draws the line.
He draws a line when the guy makes that comment.
The whole interaction where he asks for the radio, he says, you know, no, I'm not a cop, and he throws the money down and everything. The guy gives him the radio, and then he says, also the sawed off under the counter.
Yeah.
I honestly thought that he was going to pay for it, take the sawed off, blow the dude away, and
very
walk
Terminator,
out.
Yeah.
But it's a great insight into that guy's character, and I'm sure like he killed that guy, and I'm sure he left the money there. Like, I don't think he took the money back. You know what I'm saying? Like,
it's not about the money.
It's not, no, but like, he would pay for this shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's not going to just steal it from you. He'll pay for it.
It's one of the major things about the character of the Punisher is any of the money he ever steals from criminals, he uses to fund the war he is waging. He doesn't hold on to it just to have it.
I do want to see a Punisher series just because I fucking love John Bernthal.
He killed that role.
The guy absolutely killed that role. And anytime you can get a character that I really enjoy more screen time, I think is kudos to them, and they should be doing, you know, I would want to see that.
Absolutely.
We did get a tease at the end. I don't know if you guys saw it, but if you got a little reward for watching all the episodes.
You know what? I didn't see it. It didn't come up for me.
Really?
Well, yeah, because I watched on my Apple TV on the Netflix. Maybe all the episodes didn't register all the way watched through.
Yeah.
But I heard it was just like he's standing there and they're shooting at him or something.
So the scene that you get is a little – did you guys see it, Rugboy? Rugboy?
I did.
Yeah, I'll put it in the show notes. But
the scene that you get is Luke Cage in some sort of – somewhere, some building, and he's getting shot at and he's like, don't you know who I am? And then he's like, I'm getting tired of having to always buy new clothes.
He's just standing there bouncing off of him.
But that's the next Netflix series. So what are your guys' thoughts on Luke Cage?
I'm hoping it's good. I don't think it has a shot, but.
No? It's a character I don't know too much about, but it is the first time that we're getting into a very classical superhero kind of story. Yeah. Where it's like, yeah, you know, Daredevil, he has the costume, he has the abilities with, you know, being blind and he fights people. But you're getting into your first dude where, like, you know, he gets shot with bullets, it doesn't hurt him. He can't be cut, he can't be stabbed or hurt, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. So it's when you – I'm wondering how they're going to handle having a strong man superhero for a 13-episode run.
I'm very interested in the show because I've kind of read some stuff about what they're planning on doing. And if what they're planning on doing really happens, I think it'll be really interesting.
Give us the spoils.
Well, I've told Imran this off air, but it looks like they're going to be tackling the like police brutality on African Americans sort of thing.
Wow.
Making a show a little bit of a commentary on that. And if they tackle that, you know, an issue that's still, you know, relevant to us, I think the show could do really well.
It can speak to a lot of things beyond just comic books, exactly. And that would be very good. And
they always pick a theme to hang everything on there. Jessica Jones, they picked PSD, whatever, post-traumatic stress disorder.
Photoshop documents?
yeah, PDFs.
PFD, PDFs?
PSD.
God, no more.
I forgot the D.
Go ahead, Rugboy. Yeah, go
ahead. Yeah. So they always pick some kind of a thing to like model the show around. So they had one thing, one theme for Jessica Jones, for Daredevil. It's the, you know, the duality of stuff and the law, blah, blah, blah. And I don't know, with Luke Cage, if they're going to do kind of a thing where they're exploring police brutality, that could be cool.
Look, so far, they really haven't had a huge misstep with any character that they've put on screen. I have implicit trust that they're learning from this and moving forward, they're nailing these things.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
No, well, that, minus that, I'm talking about MCU minus television. Yes.
Do you think that Jessica Jones is going to be in Luke Cage's show?
I think she will show up. Yes,
she may show up. Yeah,
because they had a relationship, and him and Claire Temple have a relationship. The show, by the way, drops Friday, September 30th.
I enjoy I believe it's Mike Coulter.
Mike Coulter.
I enjoy his like kind of quiet charisma. I think it works. I've
thought he was very good at it. Yeah.
I've always imagined Luke Cage as kind of being this like loud African American because that's kind of always it was just kind of always written as this like braggadocious sort of guy.
He was built to be the blaxploitation superhero in the 70s.
Yeah.
So he was meant to be like this loudmouth kind of John Shaft type of thing.
Right.
It's in Harlem. And this one is not in Hell's Kitchen, right. Which is good.
What I think would be interesting is they also, outside of having different themes that they follow, there's also different kind of genres that they build around these shows.
Yes.
Because Daredevil follows more of a classical superhero story, but also, like we saw with the second season, it's got a lot of this law and order courtroom drama thing that it built into it. Jessica Jones was flat out a detective noir story. That started taking shape into also a survivor's story against the whole thing with Kilgrave. I think if they built Luke Cage to be a little bit more, maybe follow a little bit of a noir concept, but build it as more of like almost like a cop drama that they would do, like The Shield and stuff like that, where it is, you know, Luke Cage kind of being this John Shaft type of character of dealing out justice here and there. I think they could do well with it.
Don't you think that his origin is kind of interesting, though?
Like his Luke Cage's, I think it's really interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's about gang violence, and there's heroin involved.
He's going to be he'll be a fugitive. You know, he's going to be betrayed.
They also touched on Anna and Jessica Jones that apparently in this sense of it, his origin is going to be playing a lot more into like the experimentation and stuff that Kilgrave was involved in.
And that
I'm
she
sure
was
going to go diving into that.
She wasn't involved.
The same company. What was that company?
Remember that conversation? She goes, how'd you get your powers? Experiment. How'd you get yours? Accident. She was in an accident.
But wasn't that file tying it all together at
sort
the
of,
end?
Yeah. Yeah.
With Luke Cage's.
But I think
thing.
Hers was like inadvertent. Like
that was,
I don't know. Maybe I'm just spouting off, but I think it's hers is more accident based where his is clearly like they were making a weapon.
Right. Right. Know?
So that's something they can explore.
They just glossed right over that with them, like accident, experiment. Okay, cool, we're done.
We're cool. Let's fuck.
Plus, we'll get to see a cool black villain called Cottonmouth, who I guess he just smokes a lot of weed and gets Cottonmouth and then has to drink some water. I don't know what his powers are.
My God, that is the most racist thing I've
ever And he looks like, yeah, it's Cottonmouth.
I'm excited because, like Imran said, that these Netflix series I've thoroughly enjoyed. So until they prove me wrong and say and produce something that is complete garbage, I have to trust them. Go ahead,
Cottonmouth. Should team up with Plant Man.
Well, also you get Misty Knight, who's very that's very blaxploitation-y. She had a huge afro in the comic books.
Is that right?
Yeah.
We'll probably see Claire Temple a lot too.
So it's gonna be really interesting how they update these the 70s blaxploitation themes and make it modern day, but still kind of keep that same because it's still kind of in his character.
Well, they're still pimping, and yeah, they're still like drugs, and there's still like there's a new era of gangster in gangs now. So
they did a very interesting thing with the Daredevil series where I mean back in the 70s and 80s when the comic first started, Hell's Kitchen was a terrible place.
Yeah.
And nowadays it wasn't, but they decided to use the concept of the whole event of the Avengers fighting the aliens and all of the massive destruction there to basically push New York back. Yep. Like 30 years.
The good old gritty New York that I remember so that it used to be.
You can now, you know, if you're able to believe that, you know, Hell's Kitchen really is a cesspool of crime and not the gayborhood of Manhattan,
yeah.
You can easily start to believe that Harlem will still have plenty of problems with gang fights and, you know, prostitution or whatever it is going on.
And I'm hoping that's kind of colorful in terms of it being set in Harlem and a lot of jazz clubs kind of thing.
That trailer we saw, which was only like 20 seconds, it was very
it's bright.
No, it wasn't bright.
it still had a lot of a little bit of a darker lighting to it, yeah. And more of like the same aesthetic you saw with the other two.
Yeah, it looked a little washed out. It reminded me of like Jessica Jones, sort of.
Okay, yeah, no, I mean that's slightly brighter than Daredevil.
It's brighter than anything.
More in the day.
Yeah, that's the thing. Yeah. Were there any day scenes? Yeah, there were some of Daredevil, apparently.
Daredevil's.
I mean, this
dark.
Is their dark show, so for them to go back and forth, they kind of have like a lighter palette show than the dark show, and then a little bit different palette. That's a good idea.
I could see that. I could see it being a darker palette for Luke Cage, not only just because of the Hector,
yeah,
but because of what the issues they're tackling. I don't think it lends itself to being a bright show.
I mean, the logo there's it's got yellow at least, but it's
the logo is funny because it's very comic booky.
Yeah.
It's big black.
Well, he's got legit superhero powers,
right?
And they don't really show you what he can do, even in Jessica Jones. Like, you really don't get the sense of he's kind of like a Captain America, but even stronger, but almost like a Hulk, even, you know, in not as powerful, but he's, you know. He's indestructible. He's got super strength. You can do a lot with that.
How do you make that interesting and still kind of not too over the top, but realistic?
I don't think that's not something I think they're really concerned with. They're more concerned with making you fall in love with the character.
Yeah, that's what they should be concerned
with. That's what Jessica Jones was. I mean, her powers were so downplayed; it wasn't even a thing. Like you didn't know she had those powers until something happened, and then they didn't make it a big deal. It was about the character, and that's what I enjoy about the Netflix shows is that, and the Marvel Universe except for Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. is the characters are so awesome. I love just seeing how
and
they interact.
Hopefully we get to meet Danny Rand a little bit also in Luke Cage.
Maybe.
That'd be nice.
Yep.
You might see that. So, any other thoughts?
When you watch The Flash, though, he uses his powers, and it's part of the character. You know, it's built into the character.
The Flash? You
know? Yeah, so it should always be a... Should be thought about. It shouldn't be an afterthought.
You should still have fun with
Jones,
it.
Yeah,
you could definitely have some fun with it. I like his fighting style too. Just real quick in Jessica Jones when he was like fighting the bad guys, it looked like he had like, this look on his face, like, "Are you serious?"
Well,
right?
That's
now?
What I'm saying is, how do you make this interesting? Is if you're going to do set action pieces, if the guy is just standing there and he just like throws people around, like, will there be someone who can actually challenge his?
Well, it's part of why
strength.
I think. One of the, why I'm aiming a little bit more towards doing like a John Shaft or like a police detective drama or something like that is because it is very difficult to have those moments where because he's basically invulnerable that they can make him, you know, vulnerable. They'll have to do it. It sounds weird to say. They would have to do it emotionally because nothing can hurt him physically.
Yep.
And it's in the same sense as to what they did with Jessica Jones.
I could also see them. I mean, the synopsis mentions that he's a fugitive. Mm. I could see them him getting framed for a crime, and because he is black, he's a little bit racially profiled, and he has to prove himself
all the time.
You know, well,
he has to go find out who did
right.
it.
Right, he has to prove.
Meanwhile, the cops are coming after.
Exactly, some sort of like chase storyline like that.
Yeah, no, I mean, like I said, they haven't failed a character yet. This is gonna be good stuff. I can't wait. And every 6 months, we're getting like Netflix goodness. For at least the next couple of years.
Well, at least
it's a great time to be a fan.
The Jock and Ned Podcast.
I tell you, man, you go into 13 hours of Hell's Kitchen, you come out a different person. I'll tell you what, Matt, thanks for joining us. Why don't you tell the listener where they can find you, reach out and say how much they enjoyed the show?
Well, the listeners can find me on... How Do I Jump, writing, hd1jump.com, as well as on some of their podcasts, including The Geek Chorus, which I was just on talking about this very show.
That's awesome.
As well as their weekly Jump podcast about gaming. They can find me on Twitter at Matt Delhauer, and they can also find the Ginger Geek blogs at gingergeekblogs.blogspot.com.
Right on, Ruggs. Where can they find you?
You can find me only in one place, besides Jock and Nerd. And that's Twitter at Really Rug Boy on Twitter. So hook up with me there. Send me a message.
And now this is the part of audience participation, listener. This is the part where you can chime in, help us out. There's a lot of fun things, various levels where you can help us out from, you know, you want to spend a little bit of money to spend no money. There's multiple ways if you love the show. Let's just start with, let us know what you thought about Daredevil Season 2. You can go to jockandnerd.com/contact. Send us an email, a tweet, a voicemail, whatever. We'd love to read it on the show.
You can also go onto our website, go to jockandnerd.com/review, and write us a nice review on iTunes because that helps the show. You can also subscribe there on iTunes or any podcast-catching app that you have.
You won't miss a show. Also, we're live on the Blab, so check out jockandnerd.com/live to check out our live shows. We have a lot of fun. Now, if you really love the show and you have a little bit of extra change lying around...
There's some ways to support us.
There's some fun ways. Like, we have merch, everyone.
Jock and Nerd.
Jock and Nerd merch. Just go to jockandnerd.com/shop. You can pretty much put our logo on any kind of apparel, men's, women's, tote bags, mugs. There's cool ringer tees, hoodies. It's lots of fun. And if you want some more bonus content geekery, we have kind of a virtual tip jar. It's called Patreon.
Oh, yeah?
Visit jockandnerd.com/Patreon. And for as little as $1 a month, you are going to get little mini Rug Boy episodes. You're going to get initial reactions. Right now, you can hear our initial reactions to Batman versus Superman, Dawn of Justice, before we do our review. And you're going to get a lot of fun bonus content. And there's multiple tiers. Just check it out and decide how much you want to donate. Every little bit helps.
It definitely helps, and we definitely appreciate any sort of loose change that you can spare our way. So,
and finally, Ruggs, what the most freest, easiest way to help us out? What do we tell them?
You got to tell your friends.
That's right.
Or just tell anyone. Tell anyone that reads comics. You guys have a conversation about, you just watched Batman versus Superman. You just watched binge-watched Daredevil. And say, hey, you should listen to this program. We just discussed this. Tell them to go to jockandnerd.com.
Give him one of these.
Jock and Nerd.
JockandNerd.com. You guys, all the stuff we talked about will be in the show notes. So you can find JockandNerd.com/Daredevil2. Daredevil the number 2.
There you go.
All right, gang. This has been awesome. Thanks for tuning in. We love every second you spend with us. This is the Jock and Nerd Podcast. My name is Imran.
My name is Anthony.
He's the Jock.
And he's the Nerd.
And we'll catch you up next time. Yahoo, that was fun.
I think we literally did cover every single moment.
The only thing that was left on the floor was that 1 minute clip of Daredevil and Punisher talking on the roof.
Oh, yeah. We didn't talk about that.
See, well, we kind of covered what they talked about.
Yeah, and we covered the ideas that they were talking about.
We don't need that.
I was going
to say, it honestly would have just been like, let's all sit here and listen to this. Yeah. And then after it was over, like, Okay, then.
I deemed it unnecessary. I just had it there just in case.
Jockey Nerd!
You run around this city like it's your damn shooting gallery.
Yeah, what do you do? What do you do? You act like it's a playground. You beat up the bullies with your fists. You throw them in jail. Everybody calls you a hero, right? And then a month, a week, a day later, they're back on the streets doing the same goddamn thing.
So you just put them in the morgue.
You goddamn right I do.
You ever doubt yourself, Frank?
Not even for a second.
Really? Really? You never think for one second.
Shit, I just killed a human being.
It's being pretty generous.
A human being who did a lot of stupid shit, maybe even evil, but had one small piece of goodness in him. Maybe just a scrap, Frank, but something. And then you come along and that one tiny flicker of light gets snuffed out forever.
I think you're wrong.
Which part?
All of it. I think there's no good in the filth that I put down. That's what I think.
And how do you know?
I just know. Look around, Red. The city, it stinks. It's a sewer. It stinks and it smells like shit. And I can't get the stink out of my nose. I think that this world, it needs men that are willing to make the hard call.
That's what I think. I think you and me are the same. We're the same.
You know it. Only I do the one thing that you can't. You hit them and they get back up. I hit them and they stay down. It's permanent. I make sure that they don't make it out on the street again. I take pride in that.
Let me ask you this.
What's that?
What about hope?
Oh, fuck.
Come on, Frank.
About Santa Claus? You want to talk about Santa Claus?
I live in the real world, too, and I've seen it.
What have you seen?
Redemption, Frank. It's real. And it's possible. The people you murder deserve another chance.
What, to kill again, rape again? Is that what
you want? No, Frank, to try again, Frank. To try.